And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here!
From me, Ernest Hancock, here in Phoenix, Arizona, from the BEAUT full studios of Freedoms of the Nest, freedomsphoenix.com. Okay, we got a great show today. We have in the third hour Adam Kokesh. He's going to be talking about his sentencing that's coming up. He's found guilty of something. I'm going to find something him to be guilty of. We'll see what he's got to look forward to. You know, it's... Adam's been a good friend for a long time. You know, he stopped by on his way out to California, and we got to have a party, you know, and say hello and so on. And he got out, you know, of jail this last time. You know, he's in Washington, D.C., and we're going to find out everything, third hour. Second hour, Jordan Page. We're going to get caught up with Jordan. What's up? He just had his fifth child. He's like... You know, he's childed up. You know what I mean? We're going to breed him out. And, you know, it's one thing I tell you I want to talk to him about is YouTube, which you knew this was coming. You know, it's Google has bought YouTube, and now they're going, you know what? All you indie artists out there, you got to sign up. You know, you didn't have a record label before. You thought you're all independent, and you can do whatever you want to get on channel. It's our now. Yeah, you got to be signing up with our... You're part of our record label. You know, so that we're going to find out. See, I knew this was coming. So I, behind the scenes, we're changing servers and doing all kinds of funky stuff right now. One of the features that we have in the background and so I'm working on is you can load video. And on our servers and make... We're working on it. We're working on it. Because, you know, we have, you know, a crowd funding, source funding program with Funding Center. Marketplace, we keep developing both of those. We're still working on that. Donna keeps adding on more stores and so on for people. We have the radio, the TV, the magazine, the newspaper. We're trying to be, you know, supply the conduit for which people can express themselves. And because they're going to need to. And one of the ways that people are able to express themselves is through finances, money. Where do they get to spend their money? You know, it's a liberty. Reason we were so bent on anonymous donating, you know, which pseudo-anonymous is not anonymous. And, you know, the Bitcoin, I'm really looking forward to all the new stuff that comes out. We've been following it for a long time from the beginning, when it was like, you know, a dollar something. You know, my first Cassatius coin I got was $4 and something. It's worth a couple more than that now. Heck, just a numismatic value. What happened is that we're looking for being able to make contribution without retribution, that they can't, they, them, those won't leave us alone, can't stop you directing your resources to where you want it to go. They want to crack down and see everything. Well, cashless society looks kind of like, BitPay. You know, where they get, and DNA sample, and you can get your Bitcoin. But, you know, one of the things that's in there is a lot of the development that's coming out, you know, for the dark wallet, to be able to be anonymous, to be able to use it for various different things, to be able to have your land plotted. You know, it's on a chain for everybody to see. It's mine. It's like, you know, county recorder. Hey, who owns it? I don't know. Let's go down and find out. You can do that. And it could be, it's not mine, it's somebody else. Who is it? I don't know. It's whoever controls that password. So these kinds of things are going to change and evolve in our society to change everything. Everything. It's going to make government irrelevant. Oh, the man doesn't like that. So there's a lot of ways that you can go after people. You know, say, you know what? That's a good idea. I just patented it. It's mine now. You know, well, sometimes you can do defensive patents. You can go out and say, look, I got a patent. Now nobody can change it. Well, someone came to our attention, Reed Jessen from CryptoDefense.org. Crypto, C-R-Y-P-T-O, defense.org. Now, we got him on video Skype, and what we're going to go ahead and do is have him explain to us what cryptocurrency defensive patent aggregator, what their mission is, what their intentions, what they're hoping to do in open patent licensing so they can't patent it out from under you, but, you know, you can kind of like patent it to where it's everybody's. Kind of like Elon Musk said, you know what? You know, we got to get this electric car thing going. You know, I give you all my patent. Everybody go rock on. Peace out. You know, defensive publication, inventor support, litigation support. Oh, it sounds like Reed Jessen has something to offer. Mr. Jessen, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. Yeah, thanks for having me. I appreciate this opportunity.
This is going to be, you know, I'm sure a couple people are going to be paying attention, okay? So let's go ahead and you give me every little old thing. Explain to me what it is that you're trying to do and offer. Go.
Okay, so I think we should start at the beginning. And say that cryptocurrency, it's fundamentally a technology. And that's different than currency has been in the past, right? And so since it's a technology, many aspects of it are patentable. As you know, and as your, I think your listeners know, it's highly disruptive, right? So when things that are
okay,
this
let's
disruptive,
go ahead. Let's stop right there.
Sure.
I was on watching Elon Musk yesterday on CNBC. And, oh, you're Mr. Disruptive. Disruptive this, disruptive that. You're disruptive. What the hell does that mean? You know, what you're saying, it's disruptive technology. What does that mean? Oh, did I lose him? Yeah, Donna, go ahead and come over, and we got to reconnect. I got it. Here he comes. You know, we got right to the really good point of this, you know, is what is disruptive? Because, you know, that's one thing they had on CNBC. They're interviewing Elon Musk. And the whole thing was they hang it up and start. You got to call him. Yeah, click that. The when they said disruptive, they kept saying disruptive, and I'm wondering where that term comes from. There's always it comes from somewhere.
Hello.
Yeah, Reed, I got you.
Yeah, you got me back.
Okay, you want to turn on the video or no?
I would like to, but
I think that's what's doing it.
The Skype it defaulted to my cell phone, and so here we'll just
yeah, that's good. Let's go ahead. We started right off with disruptive. Define that, because I keep hearing that. It's like it started with a bullet point from somebody. You know,
yeah, absolutely. So disruptive, kind of a buzzword, right? But in the context of Bitcoin, disruptive means that. Bitcoin has, you know, nearly 0% transaction fee. So when Visa is charging all your retailers 2, 3, 4, 5, you know, Western Union may be charging up to 25% transaction fees. When you're faced with an alternative that really is better in most ways and is almost free, you're going to opt away from the traditional power structures and the traditional transaction companies, and you're going to choose Bitcoin or some other kind of cryptocurrency to you know, transact your economy. That changes how the economy is run.
Hit the brake. Oh, we'll get all the technicals taken care of. We'll be right back. Now, keep in mind, CryptoDefense.org. Go check it out. Get it up on your screen. We'll be talking about it when we come back on Declare Your Independence in just a little bit. We know you're out there. We can feel you now. We know that you're afraid. You're afraid of us. You're afraid of change. We don't know the future.
We aren't here to tell you how this is going to end. We're here to tell you how it's going to begin. We're going back to editing the next edition of Freedom's Phoenix Digital Magazine now, where we are telling the people what you don't want them to know. We're showing them a world without you, a world without rules and controls, without borders or boundaries, a world where anything is possible. Where we go from there is a choice we leave to you. Subscribe at freedomsphoenixeasy.com. That's freedoms with an S, phoenixeasing.com.
Okay, when we get back, we'll start off disruptive. I needed, you know, definition of disruptive and why you're disruptive. Sure. It's disruptive technology and how you're disruptive inside that disruptive technology. Okay.
That sounds great.
So let's go, and you're offering, and this is your commercial, okay? When you come back, okay. It's like, I'm here to do it, and we got an ad, a need, and they had a need, and I had the ability, and, you know, why you think they had a need, and where did your ability come from, okay?
Okay, absolutely. Cool, yeah.
If you enjoy LRN.FM, please contribute to your favorite shows via their websites and become an amplifier at amp.lrn.fm. That's amp.lrn.fm.
Rhodes, it's the Ernest Hancock Show. Where we're going, there aren't any roads.
Flying cars. You know, a whole bunch more coming. That's a disruptive technology. And, wait. Electric flying cars. Okay. Another disruptive technology is, technology of none of your business. I can spend my money and do my money and my money, and it goes here and there and everywhere and bite me. You know, they're cramping down on the internet. What, you don't think so? You know, they're starting to shut off YouTube accounts. You know, kind of, we didn't like what you said. You know, we didn't like the way you said it. You know, so here we go, we shut it down. You know, Facebook, oh, you thought they were all your friends? They're Zuckerberg's friends, you know? And you get all them emails. Oh, I just contact all my friends, yeah? How are you going to do that? Well, I just, like, you know, send a Facebook, and they'll go to a couple of them. Maybe they'll, you know, some of them actually know each other, and they'll share it or something. And I'm going, okay. And they buy up Twitter. And they buy up, you know, we had Angel Clark on. She goes, now I'm having pretty good luck with Tumblr this week. You know, so this is, it's clamping down, man, clamping down. Madesafe.net, we're working on the distributed internet. We're setting everything up for, you know, and thanks for all the fish. I mean, you know, here we go. And then what happens? Oh, Google says, yeah. You just come right on over here. We got a balloon. You know, we got Facebook, we got planes that stay up. We got our own satellites that we're buying. You know, Google's, I told you, outer net. I told you it's going to happen. I told you. Okay? So now it's going to be other alternatives. Are you going to be able to do it? And how are you going to defend yourself if you come up with a great new idea of none your business? Well, that's what we got. CryptoDefense.org with Reed Jessen on. We got a good connection now. Now, let's just go ahead and do this, Reed. You know, disruptive. I need to understand where that term came from, who said what defines it as and why, and is it all of a sudden it seems like they're building it up to be, oh, illegal. Oh, you've been classified a disturber of the peace, you know? So tell us about what it is, it makes it disruptive, and how you're going to defend the people that are being disruptive. Reed, go, man.
Yeah, so as you sort of touched on, it's disruptive in a way of it gains people a little bit more freedom of speech, and maybe it might be the currency that they're kind of afraid of. In other ways, in an economic way that people might not be talking about enough, is that it drops the cost of transaction between people and to almost zero, and our economy is built upon 2, 3, 4, 25% transaction fees. Those traditional power structures are or should be terrified of this. As retailers move away, they don't need to pay Visa, 2.99% for selling a pack of gum when you could just use Bitcoin or maybe one of the altcoins that are out there. it's undermining the power structures and the profit margins of large corporations.
Well, they're just like the government, man. You know, now you go somewhere, you try and pay for cash. God forbid you want to get a hotel room or something. You know, you can't. You can't rent a car. You can't travel. You know, you got to have a credit card of some kind. And it when it changes to where not only do you not have a transaction fee, you know, with a credit card company, you don't have the taxes that go with it because they don't know. You know, it's like, and the taxes on a Bitcoin transaction is, let me think for a second, none. But that'll change. And the reason is I've seen it change. When they started with PayPal and you had eBay, people would start their own businesses on eBay. I mean, big, they go, woo, rock and roll. I have a good friend of mine, you know, the main thing all he deals in is golf clubs. That's all he does. You know, he gets a lot of them donated from different places. He's almost no cost. His biggest cost is taxes now. Here come the taxes. Amazon, you want to buy? It's cross-state line there. No taxes. They go, hey, we need to get some taxes. And how are we going to get some taxes? We can pass a law and kind of put some finger and pressure on, and kind of now you got taxes. So every transaction that you're using the Federal Reserve notes or you're in the system, you're paying taxes, not just the 2%, 3%, 4%, 5% of the transaction fee. Oh, and some of these providers, you know, they charge their own little percent, and even PayPal. So this changes everything. I mean, everything. So I am like, what is your biggest opposition? Because if you're going to be a defense CryptoDefense.org and come out and support it. What are you going to offer when the unlimited resources of you better not are going to come after you and the whole industry? Right. So what do you got?
So we think that independent innovators in the cryptocurrency space and the distributive application space, we need to band together. These companies, Visa, MasterCard, Western Union, they have very large patent portfolios that cover a lot of the different aspects of the crypto economy. We band together and we create a formidable patent portfolio that can be used to retaliate if these companies attempt to suppress the adoption of Bitcoin. Our goal is to raise the cost of suppressing Bitcoin many times higher than the benefit of doing so. We think by that way, we create kind of a bipolar reality and, maybe a cold war, if you will. And, we allow, you know, independent Bitcoin innovators to get out there, build their products, bring them to market and compete on the merits of the quality of their product and on the price of their product rather than on the monopolies that they may or may not have.
Okay. Now I heard a whole bunch of using the man's courts. That's what I heard. Okay.
Yeah.
So this is, you know, you're playing with their ball in their field with their sportscasters and their and everything. So I'm
right.
You know,
yeah.
So I
absolutely.
But what's your big defense? I mean, your big gun in this is we're going nuh-uh. And they go boom, 800-pound gorilla, and you go nuh-uh. And I'm going right. How? What is the weapon that you're using? Just tie them up in court. You got this kind of expertise. Tell me about your abilities.
Right. So my background, I'm a patent analyst. I got my start in Silicon Valley, analyzing these, kind of outrageous patent lawsuits that are happening in the courts these days. And I've learned over time that they're very damaging to our economic welfare. I have quite a bit of experience in that kind of thing. And so as there are independent developers out there building things and coding, that's not my skill set. My skill set is understanding how intellectual property interacts with the economy and leveraging it to the benefit of my clients. With this group, the Cryptocurrency Defense Foundation, I'm viewing the crypto economy as my client, and I want to be a zealous advocate for that client.
Okay, so your profession, yeah. I mean, are you an attorney? Or are you an analyst?
No.
I'm not.
I'm not an attorney. I'm a patent analyst. My background is in economics, and I have a graduate degree in predictive analytics. So I analyze big data, kind of a quantitative finance background that I've applied to, predicting lawsuits and predicting patent values and things like that.
But somehow the NSA missed you in their swoop up for new employees.
I don't think I want to work for the CIA or the NSA.
Okay.
So
this is something that you saw. There's definitely a need. I mean, you don't have to convince me that there's a need for something like this. And you got some, you know, bona fides to be able to supply that need. But I tell you, you know, you're going up against they, them, those. This is the battle. This is it. All right. Yeah. We'll be more with Reed Jessam when we come back. Okay, Reed, who's your buddy? Who's your pal? I got Stephen Kinsella on the line. He wants to come on and be your buddy, okay?
Okay, cool.
All right, cool. So we'll go ahead and I'll go right to him. He's going to be on for a little bit. I'll let you guys duke it out a little bit. And but man, there's an ad for you. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's going, cool. Yeah, it's Stephen Kinsella. I'm going, Stephen, what are you talking about? I'm going, oh, holy shit. Okay, now this is perfect. So anyway, so he knew you'd be on. He wanted to call in.
Yeah.
So we're going to go ahead and get him part of this real quick, and then we'll get to you, all right?
Okay, absolutely.
All right.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock. To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800.
Welcome back to Declare Your Independence. It's me, Ernest Hancock, and other independence-declaring kind of individuals, such as CryptoDefense.org's Reed Jessam. Now, who comes to mind? Who comes to mind, except when he calls and says his name? You know, hey, it's difficult. I'm like, what? Oh, holy crap! Stephen Kinsella is a registered patent attorney, a libertarian theorist, lecturer, director of the Center for the Study of Innovative Freedom, founding executive editor of Libertarian Papers, blogger at the Libertarian Standard. His podcast, Kinsella on Liberty, also includes Liberty Talk with Jeff Tucker. And Stephen Kinsella, I give you Stephen Kinsella. He was interested in wanting to help out on this issue. Stephen, thanks for calling in, man. That was awesome.
Oh, hey, I'm glad to do it. I think a mutual friend told me that Reed was going to be on.
Well, and, this is you know, of course, you're top of mind in this area, you know, intellectual property and the lack thereof of the need of, and you had a big influence on me. We've done shows, you want to get a call in, start talking about intellectual property. I mean, you know, the people, man, oh, hell no. So go ahead and, you know, offer your services to Mr. Jessam, CryptoDefense.org. I mean, I think he'd want you on the front lines and helping. How can you help?
Well, you know, I've been a practicing patent attorney since '93 and actively opposed to patent law for 15 years. And the last 5 or 10 years, I've been racking my brains trying to find a mechanism that we can use to try to fight the threat of patents without abolishing the system. And that includes things like patent pooling arrangements, patent defense leagues. Taiwan's got this thing called a patent bank. And I keep kind of trying to think of the way it could work well, and I keep giving up on it or not finding the right allies. So it sounds like Reed is onto something here, and I would love to pursue it further. I have some concerns about its effect on trolls. In other words, having a defensive patent is not going to help you very much against trolls because there's nothing to countersue them for usually.
Baseball bat.
Say again?
Baseball bat. I mean, you know, it's getting to the point to where it's kind of Star Chamber stuff. You know, I can see what's going to happen. Sooner or later, it's going to get to where the culture and the attitude is like, oh, I get it. It's Game of Thrones. You just go beat the snot out of the guy, you know? So the thing is that, you know, it's getting to where it's we always make the argument that, well, you know, it's in the court system. You know, if you had the drug war, you got, your turf is being protected out in the street, or you don't see Miller and Budweiser beating each other there in court. Well, it gets to the point to where they're taking out every microbrewery and you're not allowed in this kind of, it's getting to where when law becomes unjust, you know, the people lose faith in the entire system. And I'm going
right.
to, and what I'm seeing is this patent attorney kind of thing. We see it go one creative way. Elon Musk just says, you know what? I'm not patenting my rocket engines. And you want all the patents on my electric vehicle? Here, take them. They're yours. Knock yourself out. You can't compete because you're so stupid. Okay? I'm going to show you everything that I'm doing, and I still not worried about you. So the thing is that It's a whole new paradigm that's coming that you, Mr. Stephen Kinsella, had represented years ago. I think it was 3-4 years ago we had you on the show, and it just blew a whole lot of people away with the whole concept of patents. But you're in this as a defense measure where people are pooling the patents in such a way, go, okay, you want to play the game, we'll play your game, we'll go in your court, and we'll defend against and do and whatever. Explain that to me, you know, and then we'll get it back to Reed. But I want to make sure that from your perspective as a patent attorney making arguments against intellectual property, what has to be done in order to defend a new emerging technology?
Well, so there's a couple of things we can do now, given the current state of the law. There was a change in the law a couple of years ago under the Obama signed America Invents Act, which changed the way publications affect patentability. What this means is that if you are a company with some innovation, you have a choice. You can either keep it secret, and then you take the risk that someone else could patent it and stop you. Or you can patent it yourself, which is expensive and really only does any good if you're going to defend yourself, and it really doesn't do any good against trolls. Or you can try to stop people from getting a patent by publishing your idea. So you could just take your new idea, put it on your blog, and publish it, and it serves as a prior art bar from that day forward for anyone else to get a patent on it. So it unfortunately gives you an incentive to not use trade secrets, but that's the effect of the law, but still, it's very cheap, doesn't cost you anything. You just publish your technical ideas and you tell the world, here's what we're going to do. So Elon Musk, for example, doesn't really need to grant a license to his patent. He can just stop obtaining patents, right? But he would save a lot of money and just publish his ideas on a blog or on a technical journal.
So that gives you protection. I mean, I put it out and somebody patents you. You can't patent it. I wrote it on a napkin and took a picture of it with my phone and posted it on, you know, my blog. I mean,
yes, as long as you have made a public disclosure of the invention, right, then it's out there. It serves as what's called a prior art bar. Now, theoretically, the patent office wouldn't see that, and someone could get a patent on the same idea later. But in court, you could fairly easily invalidate the patent by just showing, look, this idea was already well known.
So the value of a CryptoDefense .org effort is that it brings what to bear? I mean, just resources of individuals, or it's like a political movement almost.
Well, I'm, of course, in favor of encryption and cryptocurrencies. And I'm trying to understand what Reed's idea is. That's one reason I tuned in.
Let's go ahead and have you know, Reed come in. Reed, you know, Stephen Kinsella, an ad for you, huh?
Yeah, absolutely. And Stephen, you are right on with these defensive publications. I think going forward, that's a very, very important part, and I think that we need to raise awareness of this tool. I think people should defensively publish as much as possible. The problem that I see is that these transaction companies have been around for 100 years or more, and they already have a patent portfolio that covers a great deal of the embodiments of Bitcoin in our current economy. For example, you know, making an electronic payment with a QR code in your cell phone, though that's patented. Many aspects of that are patented, and the defensive publications are one aspect of it. But I do think that there needs to be a deterrent aspect of it. And that's why I advocate bringing innovators together under one roof, circling the wagons, and creating a membership organization that provides a common defense. But absolutely, I think that that's really important. And you also mentioned on you know, trolls like this. It's not a deterrent to trolls. Like, you're absolutely right there. But I have to follow up by saying that when we have a group of people that have a common defense and a common shared interest, we can pool our resources. And as you talked about the American Invents Act, it's kind of swung the pendulum the other way with the new inter-party review. Patents are able to be pulled up in front of a court, fast-tracked within 1 year and challenged very aggressively, and defendants, a plaintiff, you know, the people arguing for patent invalidity are winning more and more in this case. Those are very expensive, though, right? And so in order for our community to be able to pull that kind of thing off, to invalidate these troll patents, we need to pool our resources. And so I think you and I agree on pretty much just the foundations of this. Strategy going forward is really complicated, as you pointed out.
I agree. I like I say, patent pooling arrangements and sort of narrow industry defense organizations like you're trying to get together, I believe, are useful in at least two ways. Number one, you don't just roll over because of the expense of the lawsuit necessarily, right? But there may be an invalid patent you're being threatened with by a troll, but if you have a group of people with resources, then you might stand up to them, and then the troll is afraid to get their patent validated, but they may...
No, you finish your thought, but, you know, this is an interesting conversation. I'll tell you what, we'll continue this in the break. Go to the archive, where the real show is. We'll be right back here on Declare Your Independence in just a little bit.
This is Donna Hancock with Brangus Realty.
Okay, do you have Stefan's information, Reed?
I just the other day, I was CC'd on an email. Yeah, I have, Stefan, I think I do, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So we'll get, you know, make sure you guys get hooked up, and, you know, we got to have you, it's past time to have you on the show again, Stefan, so we'll go ahead and
do
you have your schedule for a couple of weeks out?
I do.
Okay, well, hell, let's do it right now. Donna, what's the date that we're back? July 8th, Tuesday. How about, let's give me a day to freaking take Tuesday and don't have guests on Tuesday, because I just need a day to, like, recap or something. But good, Wednesday the 9th. Okay, our time is 9 to noon Eastern. So any one of those hours, or all 3 hours, Stefan, I don't care.
I can do Wednesday the 9th.
3 hours of intellectual property.
Oh, I don't think we want to do 3 hours.
Yes, I do. If you're willing to do it, I guarantee we got plenty to talk about. It whizzes by all them damn breaks.
9 Eastern, is that what you say?
Yes, 9 to noon. Are you Central?
I'm Central time, but I can put it down. 9.
So you'd be 8 to 11 your time.
Yep. Okay, I've got it down.
All right, 3 hours. I rarely do 3 hours, but, you know, you're a 3 hour worth of 3 hours. I guarantee it.
I think we can find things to talk about.
Doubt in my mind, okay? So we'll get through this, and I'll give you plenty of time to work with Reed and kind of get, you know, what he's doing and what you got, and I'll give you, you know, like 2.5 weeks here, and by the time we do that, maybe you guys come up with something, or you think he has, you know, blood dripping fangs or something. So, you know, we'll take care of business. So this is, we'll go ahead and, is there anything you got to say real quick when we come back, or you just want, we'll go ahead and hold off to then, and we'll go back to Reed, or what do you want to do?
It's up to Reed. I don't want to step on his toes. I just wanted to call in.
I think Reed wants to give you a big sloppy for coming on.
This is great. Yeah. Awesome. Thank you so much.
If you want, I'll talk for 1 or 2 more minutes, and then I can hang up after we come back.
Okay. No, you just, you know, we'll just push the button and keep you there quiet in case we need you.
Okay. That's fine.
I go, and he's done. I push the button, and then we'll let Reed go, and then we'll go back to you. You know, if we think we can get you to add something, because I'm sure you know, there's a lot of stuff that, you know, having you there makes this a lot better segment for people. So we'll go ahead, and so we got that set up on the 9th. We'll do the 3 hour. I'll announce that, because there's a lot of stuff coming up. And I'd really like to, you know, Reed, when I come back, I'll go to him and let him finish with whatever, but what I'm going to come to both of you with, or certainly to you, Reed, give you an initial reaction, is trolls. Because we've had the same kind of thing. I mean, they're coming after copyright. Oh, you used a picture or whatever, and I just ignore them. But then the Right Haven thing, you know, they, you know, jerk around with people. Donna?
Hello?
I got you there.
Yep, you got me here.
All right, here, we'll do that.
Unfortunately, don't think we'll be able to do the video anymore, but I'm back here.
All right, that's fine.
And what I was, Ernie, I might have to hang up in about 50 minutes anyway, so I'll listen after I finish talking until I have to go. I'm here at a beach house in Florida.
Okay, yeah, at 56. At 56 after, it's end of the hour segment anyway. All right, here we go.
You're listening to the best liberty-oriented audio streamed around the clock, on the air, and online. This is the Liberty Radio Network at LRN.FM.
Freedom.
is the answer. What's the question?
I want to break free.
You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
I want to break free. I want to break free from your
lies! Lies, 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 lies. I want to break free from your lies. All right, no more lies. You know, I tell you, this troll thing, you know, we get letters. Oh, I represent the of the. Oh, and you published a picture of the. Oh, and you linked to the. Oh, and you're not allowed to. Really? You know, it was a Right Haven thing, you know, it was going after Daily Paul, and they're doing. And then finally, Electronic Frontier Foundation, I think, said, you want to play some, I'll go whip your ass. You know, well, that's kind of what, you know, cryptodefense.org is we got to have somewhere, we got to have a night in the fight, I guess. You know, somebody's got to go do something. Well, who better than to have than Reed Jessen, cryptodefense.org. He's an analyst, a patents guy. Oh, and then someone like Mr. Stephen Kinsella, he's going to come on when we get back from vacation and everything and be July 9th, 3 hours. Rarely do I do that, but with somebody that knows what's up, I've interviewed Stephen before and got, man, there, I guarantee it's going to be full of 3 hour definite wall to wall conversation about, and we figure out what's up. Now, that gives him time to work with Reed Jessen for a little bit and, you know, see, you know, what they can come together with, and it's already started. It's Nexus, Liberty Nexus here on Declare Your Independence. Stephen, you know, help us out. Just go ahead and help me with the troll thing, but go ahead and finish up whatever you want to say before we get back to Reed.
Yeah, I was just going to point out one thing. Of course, trolls are an enemy, but all patent holders are enemies that would use them offensively. The benefit of a pooling arrangement, and I do want to talk to Reed about more details about what he's doing. The benefit is that you don't have to roll over right away, even if there's an invalid patent. And you also have a chance at invalidating some invalid patents that shouldn't have been granted. The real problem will remain, though, however, which is that there are some trolls that hold valid patents, and there's just nothing you can do about them except roll over to their extortion. But to be honest, that's not even the biggest problem. The biggest problem is companies that are not trolls. Trolls are actually trolls are like a tax collector. They just want a little fee. They just want a taste, right? They want nothing but money. They have nothing to compete with you on, so they're not trying to shut you down. But if you have a competitor who has a patent, they often want to use the patent system to shut down their competition, and that's an existential threat to some companies. So the real problem, even if we got rid of patent trolls, which some proposed legislation would help to do, it wouldn't solve the fundamental problem, which is just the very existence of patents in the first place. Even if the patent quality got higher, even if there was a loser pays rule, even if it was easier to invalidate bad patents, even if patent trolls were abolished, you would still have a horrible problem in the economy, which is that these companies can use patents to stop competition or to thwart competition, to shackle their competitors. So that's the fundamental problem of patents, although arrangements, like, again, Reed is talking about, can help ameliorate the problem and help defend people in some cases.
Okay, now this is one thing that I wanted to kind of bring up, and Reed, this is a good question for you and both of you. I see an evolution, an attitude, an evolution in thought, an evolution in understanding what the proper role of government is, our relationship with each other, you know, what is and is not property. Do you think that, you know, out of necessity, and certainly a principled argument for CryptoDefense.org would be, you know, that you're using this as a defensive measure, but you're also advocating that the patent system itself is broken and we need to abandon it in our minds. You know, this intellectual property thing, we have to redefine. Because once you change the culture, you know, that's how laws and the king and all this other stuff, you know, their attitudes change and the trolls and all. I mean, it gets worse there for a while and you have a big battle. But if it's like the Republicans and Democrats beating each other up, but they both support the system. If you're in there in the system going at it, you know, having your jousting match, but advocating that, you know, the whole system needs to be abandoned, I mean, that has a whole other level of impact. Are you willing or plan on making those kinds of arguments?
Yeah, that's a really great question. And you and I may or may not agree about that. But the Cryptocurrency Defense Foundation, as a nonprofit organization, we're not going to make any kind of political advocacy, because I think that would undermine our credibility in that way.
Well, I know not that's, political.
That's a really loaded question, but I need to dodge it. I think.
Yeah, not political, philosophical. I mean, you know, it's. You got Stephen Kinsella helping you with anything. You're going to have that baggage regardless. I mean, right. So, Stephen, what do you think? I mean, is that all of a sudden you think you might, as an attorney for or working with, there might leak out an opportunity to go, yeah, and this patent thing sucks?
I thought only my wife regarded me as baggage, but no, I understand his concerns completely. Yes, you have to be careful to stay within the legal rules that you're trying to take advantage of. So they have to avoid political advocacy. I mean, look, there's practical concerns for this, too. As a patent lawyer, let's just say, there's a heavy pressure to be in favor of the patent system. That's why 98% of patent lawyers are in favor of the system, right? Initially in my career, I was a little worried that it would scare clients off, but I found that clients either don't care or they like it, because most clients I deal with think the patent system is a huge drain on their resources. It's a waste. They know they have to play the game to some degree. But they're happy to have someone represent them who ferociously hates and despises the patent system. There's a market for that kind of defense, too. It's just like a tax lawyer who's defending you from an IRS lawsuit or criminal prosecution. And your tax lawyer is a lawyer. He's a tax attorney. He knows the system, but he thinks the tax system should be abolished.
You know, it's like Mark J. Victor, man, criminal defense attorney, legalized methamphetamine. He goes, yeah, I make a crap load of money off this drug war, but I mean, damn, I'd rather have my freedom. This thing sucks. You know, so this is how we're looking at it. You know, and Reed, you know, right now, what are the opportunities to help? I mean, you know, freaking Stephen Kinsella coming on to say that he even, waves hands on your idea is like better not, I can tell you that. But the thing is that there are other opportunities, too. Now you got that, you know, patent attorney, someone that, you know, understands and like ew on the system. You know, what's some of the other positions you'd like to have people call in for?
You know, well, my background is not PR. You know, I think we need people to help us to kind of engage the Bitcoin community on a larger scale. I think we need help in the financing realm, for figuring out how best to shepherd our resources. I also think that we need, technologists who really understand where the technology of distributed applications are going, and to help us kind of get out in front of and patent in front of many of these people that may desire to suppress the economy. We need to be very proactive, and we need to engage, and we need to be really intelligent about this going forward. So if anybody out there has any ideas about how best to do that, we would be very open. Our goal is to be as transparent as possible and avoid even the appearance of impropriety in any way. So
in the middle of this new system that you would have, you know, you're already messing with them. I mean, you know, how impropriety is to what? You know, I mean, you're playing their game. I mean, what is it you're worried about?
Yeah. Well, you know, I think a lot of nonprofits have problems, or a lot of advocacy groups of some sort have problems with, corruption and money moving from hand to, you know, somebody else's hand and out of pockets and into pockets. And it undermines the credibility, the moral high ground that they hold. And we just really need to avoid all of that in every way. If this is going to be something that we're going to be part of the community, supporting the community for decades to come, we need to really just be absolutely transparent and always let people know what we're doing and ask for their input and then their support.
You know, again, the one thing that I remember when we did our first Freedom Summit in 2001, it was Bob Levy from Cato. He came on to talk about all the, you know, antitrust and the lawsuits against Microsoft and tobacco and all that kind of stuff. And the thing that I got away from that is that Microsoft, they just didn't pay enough lobby money. They're going, hey, man, didn't you understand? You know, we get a cut. And if we don't get a cut, we is on your ass. You know, and he's like, oh, I get it. Oh, so it's, you know, dealing with government and regulation and patents and all. It's a cost of doing business. Business be doing. All right, well, you know, that may you, all of a sudden you become a lobbyist. You know, well, I'd say lobby with a grin of teeth on philosophy. And who better than to have, you know, a guy like Stephen Kinsella that understands economics, understands freedom, understands leave-me-aloneism, along with Reed Jessen, CryptoDefense.org. CryptoDefense.org. We're going to be spending more time on this. I'm sure you and Stefan are going to be talking, Reed and Stefan together, and then we'll talk to Stefan 3 hours, July 9th, and we'll get the backstory on where we've progressed on this. Reed, thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you for having me. I appreciate the opportunity.
Okay, there we go. Hey, Stefan, thanks for coming on, man. That was a big ad.
Hey, I'm glad to do it. I hope I didn't step on Reed.
Well, no, I mean, we'll get more time on this. This gives us an opportunity. I think this is a developing story, and I'm sure Reed appreciates, you know, the, you know, street cred that comes with this.
Yeah, absolutely.
And, you know,
I read your blog all the time. So
yeah, so this is a it's got a future, and I hate. This is my point on this whole thing, is that if I got to battle him, I'm in the wrong place, it was done the wrong way. That's why I'm looking at the MadeSafe thing. It's like I can do my Bitcoin or any other cryptocurrency on a distributed, encrypted, bite me, you don't get it internet already. So, and a lot of this is coming. We're redoing entire Freedom's Phoenix in anticipation of a distributed internet. And the reason is you can see it with silent circle phones. You can see it with, you know, all this kind of, Google's going to be, oh, we were not going to plug in the NSA with our satellites, pinky swear. I mean, you know, I can see where all this is going. Privacy is going to be a marketable trait. But the point is that I don't trust them. I don't freaking trust them. I need it to where I don't have to fight them. There isn't some way they can even see what I'm doing to go after a patent. You know, I'm just like, I'm looking, I don't want, everybody wants to gather resources and go fight them on their battlefield, and I just want to avoid the battlefield.
Yeah. I think the really good example of, you know, I think we're getting to the world that you're describing, but now the perfect examples are, you know, Linux with the Open Invention Network, right? They did band together, and now Linux is running, that open source technology is on more phones than any other operating system. And another group that didn't do that is the 3D printing group, right? They were invented in 1984, and not until this year when those patents expire in 2014 is it going to really get mass adoption.
I found out that when 3D printing, we started covering that in like 07 when there was a kid, a homeschool kid in his parents' basement that was doing rapid prototyping. And he built it from his own printer, jet, whatever the hell. Wow, this is awesome. And then I find out it's decades before they had this. It's patent crap. You know? I am so sick of that. So that's why I keep bringing up the advocacy of how it's suppressing. There's going to be, you know, just given facts is not necessarily political. I mean, it's just, hey, you know, this is, you ask me, I'm going to tell you. You know, and Stefan's going to be guy, definitely do that. So I can understand you want to, we don't want to get our 5-0 whatever the hell. But I'm telling you, it's like, we saw it happen. I'll give you a good example. It was Pork Fest. They wanted to get their 501c3. I wasn't a big fan of, you know, right off the bat with that. And then they go and go and go and they never get it. You know, it's because of the IRS thing. Well, then you have sovereignliving.tv with the Blush Family Farm in Austin, and you do sustainable living or sovereign or whatever. It's a sustainable living, and they're just all over that. Oh, hell yeah. That sounds green and progressive as hell. You get your 501. So I'm just wondering, I'm going, I don't know, man. It may not be as easy. Have you got your 501 already?
No, and I don't expect it to be easy. I think it'll, our CPA is working on it, and I think it'll be a year or more. I think it's a, especially with something like this that, you know,
I think they're going to drag it out a year or more, and you're never going to get it. So
that could be.
You know, I'm. This needs to be done. Not wait on them. I mean, can you please give us some protection and tax benefits for us to go kick your ass? And they're like, let me think for a second. You know, so you see my point? I mean, I think this is something that can be done without having to have that. I mean, you want to do it, don't do it, I don't care. But I just don't depend on it. I mean, what's your view on that, Stefan?
I agree with you on that. But there's two other things I wanted to mention real quick to you guys, if we have a second. Reed, have you paid attention to that? There's a Supreme Court case that maybe 2-3 weeks ago, a patent case, where they ruled It was about whether you could be liable for infringement if you induced infringement by having the last step of a method. You know what I'm talking about?
Yep, absolutely, yeah.
And I think something like that can be taken advantage of by the just the way the Bitcoin protocol works. I mean, maybe it can be arranged or used in a way that no one person is performing all the steps of a given patent, right? So that there's infringement. So that's one thing we need to be at least educate people about and be aware of.
Yeah.
You know, the people promulgating and designing the codes and the way the systems are implemented need to be aware of that.
So what's the ruling? Is that if you added some final process at the end of something, all the other stuff is not protected?
No. It was so. Let's say you have a process patent which has steps A, B, and C. So if someone performs steps A, B, and C, then they're infringing the patent. Okay, but one person has to infringe all three steps. And there was some patent where I forgot what the name of the company was, but they did A and B, and then they let their users perform step C. On the internet or whatever. And so then the argument was, well, the company is inducing their customers to perform step C, so they're vicariously responsible for that. So it's like they're doing A, B, and C. And the Supreme Court said, nope, it's got to be one person. So that's a good, I won't call it a safe harbor, but it's a way you can get around liability for some process patent.
This week.
It was like 2 weeks ago.
No, I mean, it's something you can get around now. I mean, they'll change it 2 weeks from now, you know? So
I think that's a ruling for a while.
Okay. Well, I mean, you understand my point. I'm not, you know, counting on government to be a stable environment for me to develop anything, you know? So I'm.
No, me neither. But it's a slow process. So that's going to be the ruling for a few years at least. And the other thing I wanted to mention is slightly tangential, but
I got 60 seconds, so I got to get to my next guest. Okay. Go ahead.
There's been a lot of controversy about whether Bitcoin is a property right under libertarian theory. And my argument is that it's probably not. And I think libertarians who argue that it should be careful, because if you classify it as a property right, the government can use that against us, because then it's
eminent domain and whatnot.
Eminent domain, civil asset forfeiture, sales taxes. All kinds of things. So we don't want it to be called a property right under the law, and it doesn't need to be. And that's a topic that can be discussed theoretically and practically.
Well, when you got this guy in Texas at the Bitcoin conference in New York, and he had on cue a legislator or some congressman gets up and he goes, and I got a bill right here to make it a currency and not property. Is that beneficial to the movement or not?
I think that would be beneficial. If it was a currency, then it would be subject to a lot of exemptions under existing tax.
Well, it's also subject to a bunch of SEC stuff, too.
And it's free speech if it's money, right? Free speech.
Double-edged sword.
Hey, I gotta get going, guys. Thanks a lot, Reed. I'm sorry you didn't get as much time, but I think this worked out to your advantage. You know, so
this is wonderful, Stephen. I'll give you a call. I actually can't do it right now, but maybe later this afternoon if you're available.
It's possible. I'm on vacation right now. It could be hard. It's hit and miss. I just sent you my email. I've got my phone number. Let's find a time to talk.
Okay, wonderful. Thank you, guys. I appreciate the opportunity.
Yeah, it's been often awesome. Thanks for calling in, Stefan. Reed, it was great meeting you. We'll talk again soon.
All right, sounds good. Thanks.
All right, bye-bye.
All right, bye.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here!
Stephan Kinsella calling in, got a little extra in the bonus there between the segments and at the end. And so I'm talking, you know, readjusting cryptodefense.org. And Stephan Kinsella, man, they're going to hook up and work it out. And then when we come back July 9th, the Wednesday after vacation, after Pork Fest, after, you know, we come back and tell you all kinds of stuff on Tuesday. Give me a day just to kind of, you know, get back and say hello. And then the next day, 3 hours, Stephan Kinsella. You know, on intellectual property. I remember we did a big, I tell you, you want to get the phones going, talk about intellectual property, and they don't like it, none too much, one side or the other. So it's going to be interesting, you know, as we go into this new era about this patent and copyrighting and trademarking and everything. And it's everywhere. They're coming. They're coming for the internet. They're coming. And I didn't even talk to Jordan yet, but I tell you what, where they're coming. YouTube, you got to sign the agreement. You independent label, you got a year. You didn't want to do a record label. You want to go independent. Well, guess what? Google's your new record label. I don't know how far off am I, Jordan. Come on.
Good morning to you too.
You know, I just want to hit you right with that one right there. I'm going, yeah. All you indies out there, you're thinking you're all that and a bag of chips, and then all of a sudden they're saying, yeah, sign here and say, I totally agree. A human, you know, synthipad guitarist. Okay, so I'm just, you know, how's that affecting you? Have you been hit with that yet?
Not at all. You know, I'm. When I say independent, I very much have that. I mean, I have my own label. I started my own label back in 2007, Revolution Records, and I put out my own albums. And you know, I'm not really affected by the music industry because I am my own industry.
You know, I don't know if you know. I mean, it's just the last. God, it was yesterday we had a story up. Is that Google, that has YouTube, are forcing they're forcing all of the independent labels to sign an agreement with them that gives them some kind of, you know, cut or property right in your songs or channel or something.
No, I haven't heard about that.
Oh,
but if that's the case, then I would just, you know, I mean, I think a lot of people would not comply with that if they know about it.
This is during the break or something. Do a search, you know, Google, YouTube, independent artist, you know, whatever. I guarantee freaking tea it comes up. I think it's on the front page today or yesterday. And so this is, but let's go ahead and talk about, you know, that very thing. Coming up as an independent artist that has your views, I mean, I don't see a whole bunch of record labels sprinting to sign them up some Jordan.
Well, here's the thing, Ernie. Back in 2007 and 8, I was in front of all the major labels, and I had a manager back then that, you know, was very well connected, and, you know, she would call me after every meeting with them saying, oh, they loved you. They loved the guitar work. They loved the voice. They loved the songwriting. They, like, you're the whole package, blah, blah, blah. She says, but the same thing again. They don't like what you're singing about. You got to write some other types of songs. You can't, like they don't want to try to sell what you're putting out, and because they don't want to be controversial. And I'm like, they're all idiots. They don't understand what a huge market there is for this kind of stuff. Everyone's pissed off, you know. And so I had the opportunity to, you know, sell out to what they wanted back then, and I said no, forget it. I was put on this path, and I've got to see it through to the end, no matter what that means. I can't change what I'm doing. Or, you know, then I've totally negated the whole purpose for it in the first place.
I tell you what it means. It's you're going to engage it with a freaking Jordan Page army, you know, with leading the pack, 5 Jordan Page children. So let's go ahead and talk about your new baby. How's everything going?
Oh, he's awesome. He's a big boy. He was 11 pounds, 4 ounces.
Oh, my goodness. Didn't you home birth?
It was home birth in the birth tub. My wife is pretty amazing, and I got to deliver him, so that was a first for me. And
oh my gosh, 11-pound home birth! She's screaming all kinds and, you know, nasties. Was she not?
She was the Zen master. I had this meditation music playing, and she was just like, you know, one contraction she'd have, she'd scream like Leonidas, you know, and then the next contraction she'd be completely silent. And then she'd say, that was the worst one I ever had. It was like, well, you screamed the last one.
Oh.
I can't imagine how bad this one was. But she breathed through it, man. She focused. She concentrated. And she pushed out an 11-pound sumo wrestler.
Oh, my goodness. That is amazing. Well, tell Mary we love her and said hello and glad you guys are all okay. Holy moly.
Oh, we're fine. We had amazing midwives, and they took real good care of her after the birth. And You know, it was really great that I was able to not just coach her, but deliver my son. And it was pretty awesome.
Wow. So how much training they put you with? Or they just said, here, sit, you know, get ready to catch? I mean, you know.
I've been in the end zone for four other births, so I pretty much knew what goes on.
It wasn't until my third child, because we had emergency cesarean the first one, the cesarean the second one, and then we went vaginal the third one, which is, you know, unusual after cesareans. But so when they did the third one, they didn't, all the classes I did, all the stuff, they didn't tell me it comes out pointy head sausage. Nobody prepped me for that. So when it come out and the shoulders are all, I always have wondered, the head's biggest, it looks like the shoulders are out. Well, they collapse. Your shoulder collapsed, the collarbone, it kind of like you're a tube. You know, it came out like a sausage, and I'm like, what the hell is that? They did not prep me for that, okay?
Yeah, little blue cone head aliens covered in jello, man. That's what they are.
Oh,
but the worst part is what comes after. See, no one prepared me for what comes out after the baby comes out. And I happened to look down when we had John back in 2007, and I happened to just randomly look down, and I saw it, and I was like, bah!
Yeah, the placenta, all that. Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Wow, what an awesome experience. Were the kids there? Were the kids there with you? The
kids were home, but they were just like, it was funny. Like, she had her first contraction right as I had put the last kid to bed. So they slept through the whole thing. They woke up, and, you know, my 3-year-old Veronica woke up after he was already cleaned up, and we were in the bedroom, and she came in, and she sat, and she was so excited, and she saw him, and she came over and kissed him. She climbed into the rocking chair with me and sang him Somewhere Over the Rainbow. And I was just like, it was the most precious moment of my life, man. So she's got a very special bond with him, and he loves her, and so it was pretty cool. So the next morning they woke up and they had a baby brother. It was awesome.
Wow. Yeah, you know, Rhea just had her, you know, Kellen Troy, warrior.
Yeah.
So it's been great. You know, I'm really glad to see, because a lot of times we get criticized, you know, you have a, you know, bad circumstances around the country or bad times and all, which is always bad times, and you're going, oh, how could you have children at this time and bring them into this world? That's why you have good children from good parents, to breed out the bad guys, you know. So Jordan Paid be doing his part, okay? So when we come back from this break, we'll get into, you know, your career more and some of the things that's going on, because you travel around the country a lot too, and I'm really interested in how you know, the movement's changed and evolving, and the people are getting older and having babies, lots and lots of babies, you know. So, and then they're going to be brought up, what, you know, with the same way that we were, you know, stick you in front of the television and have Disney brainwash you into, you know, you got to go buy, you know, princess outfits and swords and kind of whatever's got Disney on at lunchbox, and then you go to the government schools and get the indoctrination there. Kind of, you know, it's changing. Is changing rapidly, and who's in the living rooms playing concerts? Mr. Jordan Paid. He's going to give us perspective and how he's evolved too. We'll be right back here on Declare Your Independence with Jordan Paid. Oh, finally we get to catch up, man. You know, how the hell are you?
I'm great, buddy. I'm really good. I'm excited for Pork Fest. I have like a great spot at Pork Fest on Saturday at 6:45, right after the guy from Overstock.com speaks.
Patrick Byrne, yeah, right on.
Right after he's done is when I start. So it should be a really good turnout. And, you know, I got a bunch of sponsors this year, and so I was able to, you know, to make financially, to make it really worthwhile. And I'm planning three house concert tours in July. And, you know, I just got so much fun. I wrote three new songs recently. Like, I haven't written in like a year. I wrote lots of music, but not any real songs. So I could talk about that, you know.
I caught most of what made me think that, you know, call you again was your baby. And we had on Next News Network, Mike Salvo show. I had Salvo on also, and then I was watching something on weekend. I was doing something last weekend or something, and they had you like 24/7 that interview all over the weekend. You know, every time I look over at N3, they were repeating that interview that you did. And so I got catch most of it and everything. I can see your evolution of, man, you're just, you know, discarding all the BS in your life and as far as your attitude towards the man or something. So, you know,
I have you to thank for that, Ernie, in large part. I really do. You know, it was you and Adam and John Bush and Pete Ayers and there's one more person I'm forgetting, but oh, Rob Pepe. Yeah. The big five. You guys are my big five but you were the first one that really like started, you know, getting me thinking about the whole construct of the Matrix.
You know, the thing is that I can see the evolution in society and in people, and they do it. And people of good character, they eventually, you know, it's like when I say the difference between an anarchist and a libertarian is about two or three election cycles. You know, it's because it's when you're paying attention and you're a good person. I mean, even my brother-in-law he was in the Navy, he works there refurbing subs or something in Norfolk Navy base. He can't wait to get home to watch his Fox News, and he would have Glenn Beck, Rush Limbaugh, and Sean Hannity's books on his coffee table, George and Laura Bush on his mantle. Okay? You think I'm kidding? I'm serious. And then he calls me a couple years ago and he says, you know, I just registered libertarian. And usually the first thing I say to everybody is, you're still voting? But for him, I kind of kept going, hey, man, of course you did. You know, you're a good guy. And I'm finding that people of good character, they just, you know, they evolve into, you know, the cognitive dissonance is not a comfortable position for them. But some people it is, and that's what I want to talk about when we come back, is your evolution and the people as you're going around. I think these living room tours are awesome. That is a good idea. You should come by. Are you going to do an Arizona one again?
I want to. I'm looking at when it gets a little cooler, maybe. They're having the Freedom Fest, I think, in September, so I'm probably going to try to plan something around then.
Okay, which Freedom Fest? Are you mean Libertopia?
No, up in Sholo,
well, that'd be awesome. That's kind of what we did last time.
Yeah. So I was going to try to plan a tour around that, and have that will be one of the stops that I do.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll go ahead and we'll do that. We'll do that. You know.
Cool.
All right. Here we go.
While our satellite channel is free to listen to, it's not free for us. You can help us cover our satellite costs with the chip-in on the right side of the page at lrn.fm.
To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800, 602-264-2800, and now, Ernest Hancock.
Wow! I feel good. I knew that I wouldn't. I feel good. I knew that I wouldn't.
So good! So good! I got Jordan Perry! James Brown, they're going to be doing a movie about him and everything. You know what they're going to be doing? You know what they're going to be doing? About 20, 30 years, they're going to be doing? They're going to be doing a movie about Jordan Page. You know, I guarantee it. It's going to be definitely part of, and I can see it's going to be another movie of We Need to Understand and How We're Going, and here it comes in 3D and high def from Mars. Okay? You know, here it comes. So this is, you know, I tell you, don't you see it that way? When you look at your kids, you're going, you know, by the time they're, you know, in their mid-20s starting to have families and everything, you're going, the progression is going to go towards, there's going to be a conflict. There's going to be a testing of our resolve to be left alone. I guarantee that. So this confrontation, you're providing the lyrics for in a lot of different ways. And you say you got some new songs coming up. These songs have to do with, furniture making or something? What are they about?
Yeah, well, actually cabinet making and basket weaving, Ernie.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I was just wondering, does it have anything to do with, that freedom thing or something? I mean, you know, so tell me what they're about.
Well, so I had like a year of just a dry spell where I'm writing lots of music but no words. I just couldn't access my lyrical muse, and all of a sudden, I have my anarchist theme song, which is the song called Already Gone. and it was missing a bridge for, you know, a year. And I was sitting on my porch, and I'm like, can I just not write anymore? What the hell's going on? And I said, you know what, I'm just going to finish this song. So I just pulled it out, and I just wrote the bridge, and it was perfect. And I was like, okay, I can still write.
Okay, wait. You got to tell me what a bridge is.
Oh, bro, bridge is a part of the song. Like, you have the verses and the chorus. The bridge is a part of the song that happens like two-thirds of the way through. It's a little bit different and ties the whole song together and pretty much sums everything up in one little section.
Okay.
So it carries you from the second chorus into the last chorus or the third verse, either one. That's, you know, generally in a songwriting scheme, that's how it works.
Okay, I just talking to you musicians like talking to computer geeks. Okay, so go. Yeah, hit me out here.
So I finally finished this song, which I've been wanting to have done forever, and I never played it because it wasn't done. So super happy about it. And then I hear this old Bob Dylan song that was never released, and it just so happens that I had this other riff in my head that the way that he sings his song, the meter and the rhythm of it works perfectly with this other riff that I couldn't figure out how to sing over. And so, you know, I sit down and I write this song. I've been doing a lot of research about deep underground military bases and extraterrestrial cooperation with the U.S. government. And I come across this story about the Dulce base underground in New Mexico, and how there's all these whistleblowers have come forward saying that they've got tens of thousands of people down there that are being tortured and experimented on, and that's where all the disappeared people go, or as well, like lots of them go, is that they all end up in these deep underground bases for, you know, the Illuminati and extraterrestrials to torture and eat and do weird stuff to. And I was like, you know, whether or not that's true, it's a really fascinating story. So I wrote this song called Underground, and in parentheses it says Ghosts of Dulce. And it's a really interesting song. It's pretty heavy, and it's got a really beautiful melody to it, and really heavy subject matter. And you know, some people when they first hear it, they may think I'm talking about, you know, Satan, or, you know, because I talk about the enemy is underground, the people's enemy, but if any unknowing person were to Google underground Dulce, they will get all this information about this base and how and all this about extraterrestrials. So it's kind of like a Trojan horse. Is that if anybody Googles what the title of the song is, they'll get an eyeful off. That's
underground,
sure.
Dulce, is that what the title is?
Ghosts of Dulce, yeah, underground Ghosts of Dulce.
Okay, and, now spell Dulce.
D-U-L-C-E.
Okay, D-U-L-C-E.
All right, there was a whistleblower in 1995 who was murdered in his home. His name was Phil Schneider, and he claims that he was part of the excavation team that were boring the tunnels for the space. And they opened up this massive underground opening, this cavern, and there were all these, you know, 7-foot-tall gray aliens inside it. And a huge battle ensued, and he was almost killed. He had his fingers burned off. He had a lot of empirical evidence, you know, showing that, you know, that this was going on. But he went on a speaking tour, and right in the middle of the speaking tour, he was murdered. He was choked with piano wire in his home.
Oh, suicide.
He totally committed suicide. Another guy named Thomas Costello claimed to be a high-level security officer there who had, you know, I mean, years of experience working with ETs and seeing people in cages in like the, you know, like 3-4 miles down in these bases. And he started researching who these people were, and that they were actually just normal people who had disappeared. And they were, and no one knew where they were, but they were still alive, and they were in these cages being tortured and experimented on. So, I mean, whether or not the story is true, It was an interesting. I'm a storyteller. It was an interesting story, and you know, I put it in a song. I also wrote The Ballad of Bradley Manning, which had, you know, I made this post on Facebook that, you know, I just wrote The Ballad of Bradley Manning, and everybody starts, you know, hounding
Chelsea!
Me.
Chelsea, it's Chelsea! Oh my God, you're gonna go to hell! You didn't say Chelsea.
No, I said, you know, man, I'm like, you know, what about Chelsea Manning? And I'm like, well, I don't know, he's Bradley to me. I mean, if he's Chelsea to you at school, you know, whatever. So then all the people started, you know, yelling at me about that. And then I made this big response saying, you know, I am not against transgender or homosexual folks. I said, I think they're as much of God's plan as as anyone else is. You know, I don't have any, you know, issue with it. To me, it's a non-issue. And that shut all the people who were, you know, yelling at me up. And then all the Christians come out and start yelling at me that I'm not a real Christian. So I'm getting attacked from both sides.
You can never be Christian enough. You can never be atheist enough. So I don't care. You know, I'm just like,
yeah,
look,
I don't care
either. As long as you're leaving me alone, it's good. You know, the thing is that I was wondering how I was going to segue into, you know, you can't be conspiratorial enough. And then Jordan takes it, you know, to 11. So I'm going, because I saw your interview and you brought some of this stuff. I go, ooh, some got Jordan interested in this other stuff. So he just brought it up himself. So this has been part of, true or not, you know, it's kind of, you know, I'm open to whatever the truth is. And I remember you saying something that I thought was interesting. You said, you know, if this sounds, you know, this sounds a lot more plausible than a whole bunch of other creation stuff I've heard, okay? This sounds a lot more plausible than a whole bunch of other stories that we're expected to believe. This sounds a lot more plausible than a lot of the other, you know, socially accepted beliefs. So I'm just going, you know, that is what has convinced you that there is an issue when it comes to who's really running things. You know, so this is, we want to find the truth. Who's really running things? And to get a song about it, Jordan Page, we're paying attention to what he has to say. Because, man, you don't sit down with the position that you have and everybody knows who you are and write a song about something unless there's something to write about. More of what to write about when we come back in just a little bit.
This is Donna Hancock with Brangus Realty in Arizona. Now more than ever, we have to seek out good investments to help secure our future. The real estate market across the country today seems to have recovered. Inventories are low, housing prices have gone up over the past year, and money is available to lend. But you must be careful to read between the lines of what the mainstream news is reporting. There is a shadow inventory, and the market is manipulated by a multiple number of factors. And we will need to anticipate this flux and prepare for the next market downturn in housing. There are many communities across the country today that have a growing mindset of preparing to ride out the financial storm. And Arizona is one of those places. If you are interested in moving to the desert southwest, where we have 3 to 4 growing seasons a year, and the sun is readily available for anything solar, I will be here to help you when that time comes. Feel free to use my webpage at donnahancock.com to search for Arizona properties that are of interest to you. And please, feel free to call me at 602-828-1819 to discuss options for your move to Arizona.
Okay, Jordan, is there a song you want me to come back with that's online? And is this underground one online yet?
No, I haven't recorded this yet.
Oh.
New album.
Oh, okay. Well, how many songs you got for your new album?
There's going to be about 17.
Damn, okay. All right, well, I'll just, you know, do what I want to do then. All right, hold on a second. Go ahead and help me. Your evolution has been from you started doing a lot of research and talking to guys and kind of, you know, damn. You know, did this surprise you?
Oh, my God. I mean, I was devastated when I found out.
You know, we did a thing on the Denver airport deal, and then it started, going into it. It seems to me that there has been this kind of stuff going on for a long time, and that it's got ingrained, and we're under occupation. I'm not sure if it's they, them, those is more than one thing, or they're all together, whatever. I just know how to recognize bad guys. They won't leave me alone, and I don't give a crap where they are. I remember when we can do this in the break because take a bunch of time, but bottom line is this. When the Phoenix Lights came, there was a big mass, you know, thousands of people here in Arizona. They're like, yeah, bullshit. I saw it right there, and it was a parade that came through here. And at the time, we had the restaurant, so I'm busy. I'm delivering pizza to people watching it. You know, I didn't know. And so all the libertarians around the country, hey, Ernie's in Phoenix. Hey, man, is that real? What's up? What's up? What's up? And I started checking around, asking people and everything. Oh, it's a big deal. It's all like Charles Goyette. He did it on his radio show. Had a big map of everybody given times and places where they were, and he kind of proved that there was more than one vehicle. I mean, it was a big deal here. And I go, look, I got one way of looking at it. They're Vulcans or they're Klingons. They're leave me, you know, live free and prosper, you know, peace out, whatever, or they're just getting in line with all the other guys that want to rule me. So that's all I see. You know, are they, you know, the non-aggression principle or not? You know, and you get in line with all, you know, my friends on this side and all the enemies, a big giant long line over there. I don't care. So it's just easy for me to make these kinds of determinations based on who's leaving me freaking alone. That's it. You know, that'd be a good theme of a song. Just leave me alone and welcome to our planet. You know? All right, here we go.
There are those that just want to be left alone and those that just won't leave them alone. Which one are you? The Ernest Hancock Show.
I met a young girl, a baby inside her. I looked, but there wasn't a safe place to hide her. I met an old man with a face like a mirror. He showed me his sadness so I could see.
Favorite people's right there. Now I got, you know, tears to my eyes because I met a young woman with a baby inside her. You know, this was 09. This was, you know, I think, when was it that Kaylee was born? What year was it? It was about then, wasn't it? What? Nine? Yep, it was right this time. You know, we had a, you know, our first grandchild, and I'm going, ouch, man, if that doesn't really hit home. Because my thing was, is that it's all about, I've been big on this grandkid thing, because now I'm, Donna's already going, you know, seriously, great grandkids? I'm going, yeah, we're raising grandchildren, we're helping with the grandchildren to be what? Good, productive, self-sustaining individuals to have children of their own. It's the future. And what, how old is your oldest, Jordan?
He's 6 and a half.
And he's going to be 26 and a half, and boom, you know. And we're looking 20 years into the future. A lot of the information that you're coming across. When I first met you, this is how I would describe you. Someone that has come to the light through his wife, married, you know, cured you of whatever railed you, you know, Mr., you know, honky-tonk partying guitar and bars guy, you know, and all of a sudden you get the straight and narrow, and you had your faith, you know, gave you a lot of strength, and you came through whatever problems that you had, and all of a sudden you're like, you know, being good's better than not, and you start finding, you know, the Pendulum song was kind of the beginning of, you know, your revelation of a lot of things. The Ron Paul campaign came. The first time I saw you was at the Revolution March in July of 08. And then from there to here, there's been a lot of times that you've come stayed at our home, you've performed, we've had you at the Freedom Summit, we see each other on a regular basis around the world, I mean around the country, the world, I'm sure you travel outside the U.S. too, and we go to Pork Fest, and I look forward to seeing you there. But the thing is that I've seen you evolve. It went to a point that you were angry. There was a time you're like, Ernie, man, all these, ooh, and I'm like, yeah. All the more, you know, it's a love thing. You know, don't worry, you don't got to change them. You know, it's us, and that's where your power comes from. But I keep seeing you evolve. Where do you think you're going? You're going to take your family and your fans with you. Where are you going?
Well, that evolution has had a lot to do with you. You know, you were one of the liberty thinkers that really helped me to figure out who I should be angry with. You know, and not just feel powerless, or just like I'm just swinging my fists in the air. You know, I asked you once when we first hung out during Kokesh's congressional campaign, I asked you, are they really trying to take over the world? I mean, is this real? All the stuff that Alex Jones is talking about. And I mean, I'll never forget, because I've told many people that you said this. You said, if they can, then they are. Blew my mind, and that opened my mind to embrace all kinds of stuff, because I realized that you were absolutely right, that knowing human nature, that if you know, some men want to dominate other men, and if they have the means to do it, they will. And so I started doing a lot of research into the occult, into, you know, the Satanism, into the so-called Illuminati, and all these subjects. The Bilderberg Group, Trilateral Commission, and I started connecting the dots and seeing that, yes, there actually is a grand plan, and that it's accelerating because people are waking up to it, and they don't want people to be awake to it. And so, you know, like throughout George Bush's presidency, this plan accelerated dramatically but I don't think he ever dreamed of how fast it would accelerate under Obama. And I realized, like, I had a moment when I wasn't sure how relevant my music would be anymore once Obama became the president, and you know how wrong I was to ever doubt, you know. I've gone from a person who was waving my Constitution around in people's faces to being like, you know, this isn't the point at all. The point is liberty, and we've already lost this country. I came to this conclusion that America is lost. We have lost it. When an anonymous tipper can create a situation where, you know, CPS and sheriff's deputies can be called to a person's home, and that person will not allow their child to be taken away from them just because someone, you know, made a phone call, and they defend their child and end up getting shot in the head and killed in front of their child, and there's no repercussions for the cops, then there is no freedom. There is no America. So I feel very strongly that we have lost this country because we were asleep and not paying attention. So the only thing that I care about now, I don't care about politics. I don't care about people getting in positions of power, because it's all nonsense. The only good that comes from elections is the educational aspect of them. And that's what I learned from Ron Paul, because he never wanted to be president. All he wanted was to educate people and create a movement, which he did. And so, you know, I support people running for office, but I don't care whether they get elected or not. And if all libertarians out there, if getting elected is what you're worried about, you got to just quit now.
You told me,
Ernie, Ernest Hancock is the one that said it to me, and I've said it 1,000 times since he said it to me, is that you have to change the culture. Until you change the culture that condones torture, the culture that accepts police brutality and a police state, the culture that accepts economic disparity as you know, just as the norm, that accepts corruption in politicians as the norm, until you change the culture, nothing else matters. Because public opinion is the only thing that's going to change anything. And so that is my only goal now. You helped me to narrow it down to the most important, crucial aspect, that literally nothing else in this struggle matters other than changing the culture. And you do that through media. You do that through music. You do that through the written word. You do that through the arts and all its forms. That's what you do. Because until that changes, people are going to keep, they're going to keep voting. They're going to keep, you know, having slavery by consent. Okay, you know, and compliance with the system is the source of its power. But people are going to continue to comply until you create a culture of non-compliance. And that is my only goal now.
Culture of non-compliance. Oh, that's good. That's good. You know, well, non-compliance with what? I don't comply to what? I mean, it's just not, I'm a non-complier. I'm a non-complier to what?
To any system of control that seeks to enslave you. You know, from taxes to you know, police having carte blanche to do with you as you want. I mean, we've lost that protesting spirit that the people of this country used to have. Now, maybe it's still there. Maybe it's just asleep or dormant or it's afraid. But people need to be empowered to say, no. No, you can't do this.
You know, I tell you where it's at. In 03, I get walletvoting.com or something. It's going to come down to where you spend your money. I'm like, you're still voting? I mean, you're just supporting the whole concept of, you know, I get to select who rules me. Even if my guy win, I lost. I mean, no, it doesn't matter who you vote for. The government always wins. So I'm just like, it's a mindset. And I'm going, you know, I don't have to get all angry and, you know, and whatever, because I see that the evolution of thought is coming. And the part of the jewels out of that is Jordan Page. You know, I mean, this is the kind of thing that you would expect to sprout in this environment, is this type of music, this kind of person, this type of a leader, and leader by example, or just, you know, it's not even, people aren't looking to follow anybody. They're looking to have a voice. Yeah, what he said. And as long as you keep writing stuff that people go, yeah, what he said, people are going to keep saying, yeah, what he said, and what happens. Google and YouTube decided that you're going to be their record label signer, or you don't get to be on anymore, and you don't even know about it. It just happened, and I'm going, yeah, we got to decide what. Now you know why I've been creating all of the back features on Freedom's Phoenix, because I know all this stuff is just going to be another control point for all these bad guys to do what they, them, those want to do with our dissent. And then it goes to distributed internet. Then it goes to this. Then it goes to that. Then it goes to something else. Yep. Let's take a look at that. You know, let's pull this up. What was, I just go Freedom's Phoenix, because I remember we had it on there.
Are they saying that YouTube will own rights to your music, or that they get a percentage of each click?
I don't know. We're going to find out. It was kind of... I would imagine if they do this, it's going to evolve to that, and you're going to have different levels of whatever the hell it is that they want to do. You know, it just shows that once you put your, it's like, you know, you think you got friends. No, you don't. Zuckerberg does. I mean, it's what I keep saying. I'm going, you guys don't get it. They control everything, you know, and all these agreements, you know, the 15th iTunes agreement, you know, it's like, at what point do you stop reading it? You know, let's see. YouTube indie artist. But if I just do YouTube indie artist, it'll come up. Yep. YouTube to block indie labels. Let's see, what's the... Yeah, we just had it up. It might even be on the front page today. Okay, the Google-owned company will start blocking videos in a matter of days to ensure that all content on the new platform is governed by its new contractual terms, said Robert Sinkel, YouTube's head of content and business operations. Google's decision to press ahead without some of the best-known artists shows its determination to enter the fast-growing market for music subscription services. Amazon last week launched its own service as part of its Prime subscription bundle, while Apple last month acquired Beats Music through its $3 billion purchase of headphone maker Beats Electronics. Record labels representing 95% of the music industry have signed up to the new terms, Mr. Kinkel said. The remainder, which are asking European regulators to examine whether Google is abusing a dominant market position, will be blocked from the platform, blah, 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 blah. So this is, it's real. There's something they're going, oh, hell no, we get our bigger cut of the cut. They're just a record label.
Wow.
So YouTube to block indie whatever. So, you know, you can look that up. But I'm like, you know, damn. Here we go. See my point?
Yeah, that's pretty crazy. That is nuts.
Well, it's they, them,
those. Read that.
I'm so shocked. They shouldn't do that. That'd be bad. So I'm not, All right. So it's just FYI. You know, I just want you to know what's up. Because I'm telling you, the first people I thought of is you and Tatiana and all the others, you know, in this position. Because I can see it coming. But anyway, you know, look at YouTube indie label. I mean, if you do a Google search on that, or a search, I got to stop saying Google. You know, screw them.
Listen to LRN.FM on any phone, anytime. 213-493-0309. That's 213-493-0309.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
We're falling down, slaves to the men that stole the crown. There's a warning sign, like a blazing sun. You don't want to see because you're having fun. Those who control all the information celebrate a lie to the people to keep them watching.
Rock out with you one time on one of the songs. I remember one time that after we had first met you and we got your album. I'm not even sure we had the album, but we had the lyrics. And I think it was Pena. We were at a party one time, and we were all, it was a big giant group singing, and we, and somebody took their phone, did a video of that. Do you ever get that? You remember that?
I never got to see a copy of it.
It was years ago, and I know that we weren't the only ones. You know, there's a lot of people that, and Donna has, we got a bunch of your albums and various ones that we were passing out and different things and so on, and that, you know, for years, it's constantly, you know, I think it's the only CD that's in the CD player in my car. Usually when I'm in my car, you know, I don't listen to radio. I got quiet time to think. I mean, you know, thinking's good. But when I hit the CD, oh, there's some Jordan Page. You know what? I feel like some Jordan Page, you know? So this is the influence that you're having on people. And I'm wondering, you know, is it, you know, which way they vote or who they talk to? What is the influence that you're hoping to have that you're, well, your children? I mean, you know, they're growing up thinking that dad does all this stuff to what?
You know, that's why I wrote that Message of Freedom song, so they would understand, so the kids would understand when they were older. You know, I mean, all I care about is freeing people's minds from mental slavery, Ernie. I mean, you know, like talk about like a holy quest that is. I mean, I'm based on my research that I've done. You know, I'm completely convinced that there is a very evil, very satanic element at work in the highest levels of government and international consortiums, and that their goal is to enslave the world, and they are doing a really, really good job.
Yeah, could it be Staten?
Exactly. So, you know, we were talking earlier, you know, about, you know, this, you know, about, like, you know, aliens and whatnot and all that stuff, and, you know, the New World Order is many things, but at the heart of it, it's a control system that is meant to destroy the human soul in order to create a worldwide population of slaves and absolute compliance.
Well, I know why. 'Cause they can. You know, this is the one thing that I see that you're the tip of the spear in a lot of this stuff is, you know, if you, usually the wars are won, you know, when you don't have to fight them. They convince you that it's in your best interest, or you don't have a choice, or you're not inspired, or you don't know what else to do. And if they can't convince you, at least they can confuse you. Yeah, you know what the truth is, but all your neighbors are stupid, and they're the ones that elected, you know, bumbling idiot number 483. You know, so as long as they can confuse us, but what happens when everybody looks around and go, I'm not really confused. Are you confused? No, I'm not confused. Then are they the bad guys? Or they're the bad guys, right? Yeah, they're the bad guys. And the role that you play in that is where you're most valuable, because I can see that in the end, freedom always wins. It just gets really messy first, and where you're at in your life and all these revelations of stuff is, you know, as wild as this stuff may sound and as, you know, true or not, it's not even the point. The point is there or is there not an attempt to increase the expansion and of government, of influence, of corruption, of over your life, your property, everything? I mean, is that battle going on? Well, of course it is. No, so now what do we do?
The only thing that we can do is learn to be self-reliant and not depend on the state for anything, and convince other people to do the same. I mean, waking people up is my only concern now. I used to, you know, it used to be about, you know, restoring the republic to some golden age of liberty that I realized never existed. We never had it. The America never had a chance to have a golden age of liberty.
It's always a promise.
Yeah, it was always the promise. And I grew up with a lie. I mean, I was born in the late 70s, and I was told that, you know, we fought a revolution, and we have a constitution, and we have, you know, we have freedom that other people don't have, and blah blah blah, and that, you know, God bless the military and all this stuff, and, you know, I was raised in a democratic type household, and, you know, it's all about, you know, caring about other people, and the Republicans just want to, you know, get more money, and they want to hurt poor people, and the Democrats want to save poor people, and that was a dichotomy that I was taught, that any of that was true. It's not true on either freaking side.
You know, it's not about left versus right. It's about the state versus the people.
Ooh.
And once I understood that, it was like, you know, I tell people all the time that life is this grand illusion, and it's only real enough to be convincing in order for you to learn a lesson. You know, this is all going on inside the mind of God, and it's not like some creation. It's literally God's imagination. But if you understand that, and you understand that you have creative power to influence that reality, you know, then the rules of the game change.
No, that I want to stop you right there. The power to change your own reality. And then, of course, that's like everybody else's in your world. I mean, you know, to me, it's that power. And what are the tools that we have available to us to exercise that power? Well, some of us have more tools than others, you know, and access and all that kind of stuff. But I tell you, the big thing is, you know, you go to Jordan Page's channel, you go buy his freaking album. It's wallet voting. It's where you put your resources. It's where you support people that are, you know, most effective in doing the battle, and where you're putting your time and effort. And in this direction, when you say, you know, to wake people up, to what? I mean, they're going to do what? You know, grow a tomato plant in their front yard? You know, get a couple of chickens? I mean, you know, there's something that everybody can do. You know, where do you think they should start?
Well, something I've found, Ernie, in my travels is that the real problem is that people haven't even begun the search yet. They don't even know there's something to search for. You know, Hoover had a great quote. He said that the individual is handicapped by a conspiracy so vast and monstrous that he cannot believe that it exists at all. So what I'm trying to do is just get people started. I'm trying to open the door. That's why I've said to you before, I'm Johnny Appleseed for Liberty. I'm going around planting seeds. I'm trying to get people to understand that there is something they're missing, and that something that they're missing is shocking and terrifying. And if they have the courage to look at it and embrace it, it will change their life. And once you get the understanding that you are not free, but that you want to be, that's when everything changes. When you realize that you're livestock on a farm, you're able to, you know, you become more able to leave it. And I wrote a song recently about that too. The third new song I wrote is called "Modus Operandi," which is, you know, the mode of operation. It's the state's MO. It's my first totalitarian narrative. Okay, so this song is from the perspective of the state of the bad guys, and it's very dark and sarcastic and condescending and ultimately, you know, authoritarian. And so I'm really excited about this song. I'm going to be playing it at Porkfest. I'm going to be debuting it, and yeah, it's going to be good. So I'm trying to show people that what they think they know about the world is nothing more than an illusion. And if you pull down that veil, you'll see what's really going on. You'll see what part you play in that illusion. We are all unwittingly complicit in that system of control. We build the walls that save us. It's time that we all wake up and stop participating in the system.
You know, and define the system. You know, just give me a quick 10-second. The system consists of what?
The system consists, first of all, of everyone, you know, giving their hard-earned money to the state, which in order to enslave them. I mean, I tell kids this all the time. They ask me, you know, what this is about, and I'm like, let me ask you a question. You know, do I have the right to take your money away from you and tell you what to do in your life? And they say, no, of course not. I say, well, what if I put on a suit And I steal your money out of your wallet and I give it to a guy with a gun and I pay him to force you to do what I want you to do? Does that change anything? You know, they're like, no, absolutely not. I said, well, that's what government is. Government is a monopoly on force. Government is a person in a suit giving money to a person with a gun who then forces you through coercion of death or imprisonment to follow the rules that I set out and to continue to pay me in order to do that. And the money that person pays me continues the cycle where I can keep paying the person with the gun to force you what to do, to force you to do what I want you to do. And it's the simplest way to explain it. And everyone, and like anyone gets that. They understand that. But they're still afraid to say no to the system. I mean, like, even I am in many ways. I mean, like, there are consequences for actions I mean, like stop paying your taxes. Well, what happens when you stop paying your taxes? You know, what happens when you no longer recognize the authority of the state? Well, you're going to come face to face with the force of the state, not its authority, but with its force. And force is the only thing that gives the state any authority or semblance of legitimacy at all. When those paychecks to the people with the guns stop rolling in, the state will fall apart.
Yeah. And am I worried about them falling apart? I mean, and what comes after? People like, chaos will reign and we're all going to die, and so on. How would we organize ourselves? Do we need to be organized?
There may be some chaos. But I would rather work with other human beings, create a local economy and local, I don't know, just do everything local, rather than continue to live under the thumb of a central authoritarian regime whose sole purpose is to enslave me and take my livelihood, to you know, force me to do what they want me to do. Okay, there is no state. It's a great fiction. And once it disappears, then we'll see what people are made of. And some people are going to freak out and do the wrong thing. But most people, I think, are going to do the right thing. And encouraging that, and encouraging a climate of brotherhood and cooperation and friendship with each other as human beings, as sovereign individuals working together for a common purpose by consent. You know, not because, you know, some people wrote some words hundreds of years ago, you know, or not because there's a guy, you know, with a gun pointed in my face telling me to do so, but because it's to our mutual advantage.
Well, how are you structuring your life? We're in, at the end of the show. I let you go and, you know, the music played out, but that's cool. This is in the archive. But the how is it that you're structuring your life at home, and, you know, marrying the kids, going to be homeschooling or not? Are they?
Yeah, we homeschool completely.
You know, chickens and food and growing and gardening. You know, I mean, you're in rural or urban area. I mean, what's your life going to be like?
We're trying to move out to Idaho. I mean, that's our next move. We want to get out to the panhandle of Idaho. But right now, I mean, yeah, we're on 15 acres out in the country. You know, we don't have chickens yet because we don't own the land that we have, and our the people that own the land don't really want us doing that right now. But, you know, we have a garden, and, you know, we're growing our food, and we're homeschooling the kids. I mean, John and Andrew are 6 and 5, and they're both on like second, third grade reading levels now. You know, I mean, they did a year's worth of math in a month and a half. I mean, like the homeschooling works. I mean, we're unschooling, really. We're doing the unschooling thing, and it's really, really working for our kids. So, I mean, we're doing a lot. I mean, we're making our transitions too. I mean, my hypocrisy goes only so far. You know, I mean, I'm not where I want to be as far as lifestyle yet by any means, but, you know, everything that I'm doing is a means to an end. I mean, like my main thing is waking people up.
Well, this area in Idaho, how did that come about? You know, is it somebody, you know, there, a group, a support structure, or what's going on?
Oh,
there?
Yeah. I've got tons of people up in Idaho that I'm close to. I've been there a bunch of times, you know, Coeur d'Alene. Like, I mean, we've had lots of signs that we're supposed to go to Coeur d'Alene. I actually went this past year, and it's everything that, you know, Mary and I have kind of been, you know, dreaming of, and we want to be out there and get a big piece of land and just, you know, go natural out there. I mean, like that's where we want to go next. So we're working towards that. You know, I'm trying to make money so that we can get out there and do our thing, but it's not, you know, it's not a reality at this moment, but I'm trying to manifest it. I am manifesting it every day. You know, I mean, every day I get closer to that, to getting us out there. And who knows if that's where we'll stay. I mean, I don't know where we're going to stay. I mean, you know, 6 years ago, I suggested to Mary that we get a mobile home and just live in the mobile home and just travel around with the kids. And she was like, hell no. Now she's the one that. So, we're evolving and all the time.
I'm open to a lot of things. You know, I kind of, you know, I really like Arizona. I mean, for all the stuff that, you know, Arizona, we'll see. I don't see any one place. It goes like this. They're going, well, Ernie, where do you want to go? I go, hell, I don't know. Havana, Moscow, Detroit. I mean, wherever it's the worst is where the Freedom's Phoenix is going to rise from the ashes of, you know. So Detroit's going to be like one of the freest communities after you get rid of RoboCop. I mean, you know, whatever. But I'm not really sure it's a place. You just got to find where you're comfortable and where you're supported and where it's pretty and where you want to raise your kids and kind of and whatever. And, you know, I'd come visit you in Idaho, see what's up.
Yeah. It's amazing out there. I mean, it's one of the freest states in the union. I mean, in all truth, Indiana's pretty free too. I mean, like, if you compare and contrast, Indiana's like, you know, it's one of the only states in the whole country that doesn't have nuclear power plants. There's no regulations on homeschooling at all. You have the right to shoot, cops if they, are trying to bust into your house. You know what I mean? Like, I mean, there's a lot of good stuff going on. There's a lot of bad stuff too. I mean, there's those really stupid, local ordinances where you have to have like an acre of land per chicken, that kind of bullshit. People don't comply with it. It's a big battle that we're fighting right now, is trying to get rid of these local zoning ordinances.
Yeah, that's a song. Hey, I got to get to Adam, man. It's been great catching up with you. I look forward to seeing you and hanging out at Porkfest.
Me too, buddy. I'm getting up there on Thursday.
Okay, of next week.
Yeah, Thursday of next week.
Okay, yeah, we'll be there all week. All right, man. Talk to you later. Love you, brother.
Love you too, man. Talk to you soon. Bye.
Bye.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here!
No fear! No fear, another unafeared individual. Well, he might be relatively concerned. Mr. Adam Kokesh. Kokesh versus the man. Okay, let's go ahead and get... I want to give out the webpage that everybody can go see. Adam vs. the man. Adam versus the man.com. Get all the updated. He's been doing his show. You know, he's back on the air. He's giving it what for? I don't know. I wonder if the judge has been looking at selected segments. I would imagine. Let's go ahead and find out and just say hello to Adam. Hello.
Hey, Ernie. Thanks for having me on this morning.
Hey, you know, we're concerned for you, brother. You know, I'm just, tell me, what's going on. We have some stories here that the Virginia court finally came down with a ruling on your case. They talked about you taking a Alford plea. What the heck is that, anyway?
Well, what's going on is that I just released a book, and it's really amazing. And I really don't care about anything else except for getting people to read this book. Not buy it. It's free. The audio book is free. Every single digital format available is already available for free on my website. We have translations for this book coming to have it in enough languages to cover 90% of the world population.
Oh.
And they're all going to be available for free. This is the ultimate red pill. I mean, we can talk about whatever you want, Ernie, but I really don't care about anything else right now. I came up with the idea for this book when I was in jail, and I was like, wait a second. Nobody's written this book yet. Really? Nobody's written the book based on this concept, on this formula. And I was like, You mean this dumb guy, the guy who's in jail right now for shotgun civil disobedience? You mean, you know, the guy who had to go to the Marines to figure out that war was a bad idea? You know what I mean? You mean the guy that keeps getting arrested as his form of activism, he gets to be the one to write this book? And I looked around, and it's amazing in our movement to be able to do a survey of the literature and see what's been done And I don't know that my book, it's called Freedom, all caps with an exclamation mark. I don't know that it's going to be the one that everybody on the planet reads that's going to end statism and take us to the tipping point of the paradigm shift. But it's the best book that's ever been written for the sake of being a red pill to wake people up and pull them out of the matrix and say, I get it now. It's the quickest way to go from zero to I get it. And I think it's just the reaction so far has backed me up on all of my assumptions about the book. It's been really exciting to see everybody in my audience go like, yep, this is it. This is what I want to promote. This is what I want to share with people. And this is the ultimate pill. But we'll see what happens when it hits the general population. But so far, the response has just been amazing. And
okay, people, zero to I get it. Yeah. I like that. That's good. Okay, yeah. Zero to I get it. Freedom, you know, all caps, exclamation point, Adam Kokesh. So this is, I remember you putting this together while you were incarcerated. Does that mean we get freedom too, you know, if you go back into jail? So this is, let's go ahead. We'll get to the book, man. But I mean, you know, let's talk about what you're facing now. I mean, we have a, there was a raid, a SWAT team helicopter kind of, man, we'll get us some Adam. And they go through and they bring in and they do. When you talk about, I wanted to ask before we get off this, Alford plea, explain that to me. What does that mean?
Well, I'm glad you mentioned the raid. It was the second time they sent more men after me than Bin Laden. An Alford plea is a very specific type of guilty plea. When you're charged with a crime by the government, you can guilty or not guilty. And one of the things you can do is say, basically, not guilty, but I give up, which is what an Alford plea is. It's saying, I'm not guilty, but you have enough evidence to convict me, so I'm not going to try to fight it. And that's that, like, I don't want to go to trial. There's a reasonable, you know, chance that you would be able to convince a jury that I'm guilty of this, even though I'm not.
But yeah, if you go to trial, they're like, yeah, you go to trial, it's going to be 20-30. We throw away the key because you go to trial. So, I mean, right. Alfred's kind of like, hey, man, I'm not going to, you know, say guilty, but if you want to, you know, I plead, you can do whatever you're going to do.
Yeah, kind of, and it's a really crappy position to be in. I mean, there's no good position in today's legal system, even if you're not guilty when they come after you with a bunch of charges for political reasons or just for harassment reasons or just for revenue-generating purposes. You're screwed, you know, and it's almost like a... Half the time, like when the government charges people with felonies, you'd be better off to say, you know what, just send me to jail for a month. Just send me to jail for a month and call it and let's be done with it. Rather than going through the legal battle and the hassle and the expenses and everything else, because you're going to spend, you know, 10 days in court, maybe going through that process, more if you go to trial and win, and you're going to spend a lot of money and a lot of time and a lot of stress and a lot of headache. And, you know, jail is, you know, it's not fun. I consider it an adventure, my government-induced, taxpayer-funded spiritual retreat. I didn't mind it compared to, say, sleeping in a fighting hole in Fallujah. But, you know, it's certainly less of a hassle to go to jail for a little while than to go through this, you know.
It's not maybe just a little while. It may be a lot of while. What are you facing?
Well, you know, I really don't want to comment any further on this, Ernie, and I know you can respect this because it's, you know, this is our legal situation. And
so there's yet to be a determination of a sentencing. I mean, when does that happen? Let's just, you know, end on that. The judge is going to, you know, bang the gavel and you're going to stand there and he's going to say whatever, when?
September 5th. And you're right that it's a hypothetical up to 15 years of jail time. And I faced a lot more than that before. I faced a lot worse before. And I don't want to, you know, get too specific comments here, but 15 years is extremely unlikely. It would be, you know, that's the high end of the hypothetical maximum time a judge could give me at this point. And we're hoping for a lot less. We have to make the case at sentencing that, you know, along with the pre-sentence report, which is, you know, something I did an interview for with an officer of the probation department in Virginia when I was there for court last week. But, you know, Ernie, I will say one other thing about this, that I'm very relieved, actually, because there's been a lot of uncertainty going into this. There's been a lot of back and forth. There's been a lot of, do we go to trial or not? And I really wanted to go to trial, and we just decided that based on the hassle, based on everything else, this had to be the best
play. I tell you what the trial is. The trial is, you know, when it's all done, you know, if you have to serve time, you know, whatever writing or communication you can get from there, certainly when you get out and we're in the middle of the, you know, revolution or whatever, you know, this is, you know, you've built a name and a standard and a platform and a lot of, you know, lessons learned by everybody on where we're at as a society, as a country, in our interfacing with government at any level and what you have to say and do. And, you know, there's political prisoners, of which, you know, you classify. So I'm going, yeah, you know, you look throughout history and there's always Adam Kokesh's. I mean, you know, they're out there. So the thing is that when you decided to, you had this kind of deadline, you had the opportunity to think in your spiritual retreat. And,
yeah, but Ernie, none of those other Adam Kokesh's ever wrote a book called Freedom.
Okay, that's what I'm getting to. So when you get to the point that you write, I was hooking you up here. Give me a chance. You know, I'm going into the commercial break. I'm looking at the clock here. So what happens is that when they finally, you manifest, I mean, is it Common Sense by, you know, Thomas Paine? Is that the role this is going to take? Is it, I mean, to have a book like this, you know, heck, you look throughout time, it's usually a guy that went to jail. You know, it's Larkin Rose. Went to jail. You know, you have some the most dangerous superstition. You have, you know, Freedom by Adam Kokesh for a reason. Yeah, give a brother a chance here, man. I was trying to, you know, pimp you. So now I am, when we come back, you know, can we go through kind of the chapters and about the book and what its mission and how it does it and what it is that you emphasized and where you got your, you know, your content and your evolution of thought to do it and how it's going to have an impact on people and why you think it's important and, you know, what other books throughout time have had this kind of effect that you're hoping it'll have, you know, kind of like, you know, Thomas Paine's Common Sense is the first thing that comes to mind. You know, how are you characterizing it? And we'll save it for the air, so we'll go ahead and do that. But so how are you personally, my brother?
Really, just what I said, I'm relieved. You know, I got like 2.5-3 months now to get shit done, really, to push the book out. You know, did you read the book when I gave you a preview version, right?
No, I haven't. I got 50, I'm going on this vacation, and I got, you know, like 3 books to read, you know, while I'm on this vacation for 2 weeks.
It's 100 pages. It's through the audiobook is 3 hours and 6.5 minutes. You can listen to it very, very easily.
Done. On my airplane ride, right. Pork Fest. Got it.
But Ernie, I you're going to want, and I mean, you're going to read this book and you and I could sit down and have a rational discussion and be like, hey, Ernie, what's the ultimate outreach tool? What's the ultimate book? What's it going to look like? What's it going to have? What does it not have? How is it written? And this is what we would come up with.
Okay, Donna, make a note right here. One, call Adam and get his book into the marketplace. Okay? Go ahead and do that. That's first thing. Second thing is go ahead and you can do it as a donation thing or whatever. She'll work it out. The other thing is that I want to make sure that you are able to contribute to our newspaper that's coming out. We're going to be doing it in July, but this is going to be the timeless, end-all, be-all, sum it up. 10 years later, I look at this, it's still relevant articles.
Yeah, that's like, take a selection from the book.
Okay, is it somewhere that we can pull selections? You know,
on the web. We'll talk about this on air too, but about the distribution mechanism for this book. Everything is free online. It's already up. It's already
there. We're going to try and go traditional the way we format this. I'm going to keep it, you know, from 700 to 1500 words max on articles. I mean, it's got to, you know, skip to the end, sum it up, rock and roll.
That's what's great. It's in subchapters. The whole thing is 35,000 words. And there's 60 subchapters, so their average is like 500 words.
All right. So we can do that.
Yeah.
Well, this is, I'm sorry you got this pressure on. I mean, I know you're the kind of guy that kind of puts it in perspective and copes, but, damn. I mean, prison's not fun. But,
one more occupational hazard.
Well, you make good use of the time, I'm sure, but it's it just shows the weakness of the man. I mean,
the book is out. The book being out means I could sit back and just be the guy that wrote this book for the rest of my life and never do anything else and be happy. I'm really not kidding. I go back to jail for 15 years, like, cool. When I get out, I hope a lot of people have read the book. I'm going to sit there and write letters and just encourage, like, everybody who writes me a letter in jail, I'm going to write back and tell them to share the book. Like, that's it.
All right, here we go.
You can interact with other LRN listeners in our message board at forum.lrn.fm. That's forum.lrn.fm.
To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800. 602-264-2800. And now, Ernest Hancock.
Mama, there's too many of you crying. Brother, 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 there's far too many of you dying. You know we've got to find a way to bring some loving here today.
Yeah, gotta bring some loving. How we do that? Well, there's a lot of ways to do that. And one of the ways is just, how many minds can you free? Is Adam Kokesh on the list of mind-freeing individual? Yes, I see he is. And one of the ways that's going to be interesting when you're in jail, who's this guy and they got nothing else to do? I wonder, what percent your goal should be, what percentage of the prison population going to read your book?
That's exactly it, Ernie. I'd be passing it around and getting people to mail it to me because we don't even have to mail the book. You can mail it. We have a print your own PDF version. We have every single format available at AdamVersusTheMan.com/freedom. It's just, it's amazing what you can do self-publishing in the modern era. But like I said, I really don't care about anything else right now other than this book. I mean, you haven't even read it yet, Ernie, and you said that I'm one of those mind-freeing individuals. Well, I got to tell you, man, I love the fact that there are, so many libertarian pundits out there who really ain't doing crap to wake people up. They're just, shouting into the vacuum or preaching to the choir or whatever. And that I've been able to, with my activism, really challenge people and wake people up and provide a gateway to the philosophy, to the message of freedom. And I get emails every day from people going, oh, thanks, man. It was your work that woke me up. It was seeing your videos. It was blah, 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 this interview, that video, whatever. All of that pales in comparison to this book, like insignificant, like everything I've done and this is like being very, very conservative about the impact of the book. Like, I hope, my objective is that it's the one that everybody in the world reads and takes us to the tipping point and the paradigm shift. But it's already going to be, because it's the best outreach tool right now, it's going to grow the movement. And I'm very confident in its ability to do that. And but even, estimating it on that level very, very conservatively, the value of this book is easily 10 times everything I've ever done in my career as an activist.
Well, I mean, if you're going to take the time to sit down and put your mind in on the pages, you might as well be proud of it and want to have some info. So what is it that we're going to get? Adam has learned what? I mean, in freedom, you're emphasizing what?
It's not so much what I have learned, and it's really not about me, and that's a very important feature of the book, is that it's really a pure philosophical treatise. It doesn't have anything to do with me or my experience, but I put it at the end, just in the afterward, is the first time I use the first person pronoun at all, and say that if there's one thing I've learned from the sum of my experiences, is that there's a universality of the human condition. But by and large, this book is, I don't take credit for the ideas in it. And that's, I think, a very important libertarian concept. If you understand the issue of intellectual property, as I know you do and so much of your audience does, Ernie, although that's one of the more difficult issues to wrap your head around as you're discovering libertarianism. But, if you wanted me to go through the chapters here, chapter one is the philosophy, lays it out, freedom, government, statism, property, voluntarism. Chapter two, a brief history of power, evolution of the government racket, patriotism, propaganda, government versus technology. Chapter three, war. That's kind of near to my heart as an anti-war activist. The greatest crime against freedom, soldiering, the motivation for war, the isolation of intervention, foreign aid, war on terror, real security. And then personal security gets into, justice issues. Taxation is chapter five. Chapter six is economics. Chapter seven is the catch-all other destructive racket. Chapter eight, government and love. And I think it's a pretty unique application of the philosophy in this context to make it relevant for a lot of people talking about children's rights, parenting, bullying, racism, things like that. And then chapters 9 and 10, I think, are somewhat original and actually represent a legitimate intellectual contribution to the body of libertarian thought, if I may be so bold as to say. Chapter 9 is called True Personal Freedom, and it talks about emotional slavery, health freedom and work freedom, which are kind of a little bit passe in the movement now, I suppose, but still extremely important. And then section four was the one that I wrote while I was in jail. Happiness causes freedom. Life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness is something that's been ingrained into us. But if we think of that as a sequence, we're actually getting it backwards. And chapter 10, the future of freedom, I talk about the asymptote, about the human experience going, hyper-exponential, the internet effect, which is, nothing particularly original, but I think an original way of taking those issues and looking at modern technology and how they apply to the evolution of a free society. And then localization, taking governments apart from the top down. Again, I don't think I'm the first one to come up with this idea. There are no such things as new ideas, just new combinations and whatnot. But the way that I've described localization as how we get from here to there, I think is pretty unique as well.
Well, how? I mean, do you define that, or do you just leave it up to the individual, pursue your own happiness and your freedom? I mean, it's when you get done with this realization, they come through the book and they're going, yeah, damn what he said, and you're expecting them to what? Stop supporting something or go something else or what?
I'm very specific in both senses that you can tell someone to live differently as a result of understanding government and violence and nonviolence is the definition of freedom. And there's the one category of, don't contribute, live differently, live by these values, stay home as opposed to, work for yourself as opposed to work for the man. If you can be happy and comfortable, be a conscientious consumer, things like that. Localism, strengthening your community, providing nonviolent alternatives locally, things like that. But in the bigger picture, I also provide a very specific prescription of localization, which is you take governments apart from the top down. And as I'm running for president in 2020 on the platform of an orderly, peaceful dissolution of the federal government. But it's not about me. That's not mentioned in the book. It's the concept of localization. And I do believe that this is going to happen through political consensus. But and that the electoral process is going to provide us the mechanism by which to dismantle the state. That is my primary advocacy for a mechanism of this. And I'm not a fan of voting. I think voting is a waste of time. Most of the time people do it, or most of the time libertarians vote anyway. But that when you're provided through the electoral system with a legitimate alternative and you can, make the system bend to your will, there's a real opportunity.
I tell you, one way you can bend it to your will is just is run. Oh, I can stand up here for free, talk to hundreds of thousands of people and say your system sucks. Okay, let's do that. We've done it a lot. We may do it some more yet. We'll be right back here on Declare Your Independence with Adam Kokesh, his new book, Freedom! we had Jordan Page on the hour before, and before that, Stephen Kinsella, you know, talked about a lot of this intellectual property stuff and everything, along with Reed Jessen from CryptoDefense.org, is trying to consolidate a defense against them going to be coming after all the patents and what you can do with cryptocurrencies and everything. They're going to freak out, and Wells Fargo and banking and whatever's going to, we got to go by their rules kind of crap. My thing, the distributed internet and this madesafe.net thing, and we're moving our servers, we're changing the back end, we're doing all kinds of stuff in preparation for the distributed internet. By the time, you know, that should you have to serve any time, hopefully by the time you get out, it's going to be totally different. Well, what happens is that, you know, I can see, you know, the future, and you and these other guys, and Jordan and so on, you know, are representative of a whole nother generation that I've been waiting on. And what the whole goal is that, you know, the Monty Python, the Four Yorkshiremen, are you familiar with that skit?
The Poor Yorkshireman?
Yeah, that's what it's called. And it's Monty Python. They go, oh, we used to live in this small little house where they, oh, you were lucky to have a house. We used to live, you know, in a, you know, tent. And, oh, we used to live in a hole in the ground, you know, that kind of thing. And my thing was that, and it's a funny skit. I really like it. And me and my kids, I'd read it to them, and I'd just bust out laughing. But the thing was is that we're looking for, Donna and I just yesterday were talking. She's like, can we have a hole in the ground? Can we not have all these responsibilities? Can we go live in, let's get the cell next to Adam. but the point is can you even have that? Can you have your hole in the ground somewhere, someplace out there, somewhere where they're just going to leave you alone and you're just, can you do that? Not really. I mean, we have to, it's like we're going to be forced into this battle if we want to be left alone. And it's not going, it's going to keep ratcheting down and ratcheting down and ratcheting down until we're a dystopian sci-fi movie, 1984. I mean, it's coming. And they're going to test our resolve to be free. I guarantee it. And it's just the culture has to be ready for that testing, you know, and how we do it. I don't know. We'll see. But anyway, that's where I'm going to go with that. And then, you know, that hole in the ground, wherever it is, can we even do that? And how your book addresses that kind of thing. All right, so here we go.
If you enjoy LRN.FM, please contribute to your favorite shows via their websites and become an amplifier at amp.lrn.fm. That's amp.lrn.fm.
Rhodes? It's the Ernest Hancock Show. Where we're going, there aren't any roads.
House? Well, when I say house, it was just a hole in the ground covered by a sheet of tarpaulin. But it was a house to us. We were evicted from our hole in the ground. We had to go and live in a lake. You were lucky to have a lake. There were 150 of us living in a shoebox in the middle of the road. Cardboard box. Aye, you were lucky. We lived for 3 months in a rolled-up newspaper in a septic tank.
I mean, you know, that is that where we're going? I mean, it's kind of, you know, you're lucky to have a bag. I mean, you know, this is the point. It's Monty Python, the Four Yorkshiremen. I used to read that to my kids and my grandkids. And, you know, when they get old enough, we'll start doing that. Do it my nieces and nephews. And I really enjoyed that. And it's four guys. It's just, oh, we had it tough. Well, you know, Adam may have it tough. But the thing is Donna, just yesterday, Donna and I, she looked at me. She was, you know, we're getting ready to go to bed, I think it was. She was laying down. She looked, she goes, you know, don't you think it would be nice if we could just go somewhere we didn't have to do all? Would you give up all of this? All the influence that you've kind of created to be able to do and communicate, all of the, all this activism, all the radio, all the website, the magazine, newspaper, all the, all that, to just be left alone. We can live in our hole in the ground. And I go, abso-freaking-lutely. That's the point. All of this is to be able to just go to the little itty-bitty out in the middle of the nothing and leave me alone-ism. Leave me alone zone. I was talking to Karen Katowski, and I just want to leave me alone zone. Boom, I went on GoDaddy, got leavemealonezone.com. Leave me alone zone. That's all I want. Now, if you're running for a campaign, you need to go get this one, Leave You Alone Zone. You know, Arizona, the Leave You Alone Zone, dot whatever. I mean, you run a campaign based on just that. The thing is can you just go somewhere and be left alone? No, not now. We have to change the culture. We have to have people understand that that is the goal. And that was the promise of government. that here in America, the concept of life, liberty, pursuit of happiness. You get to do whatever the heck you want as long as you're not bothering anybody else's life, liberty. Peace out. Do we have that culture now? No. It's a culture of, could it be Staten? I mean, you know, I see that. And a book like Freedom hopefully will change the culture, will help us understand, you know, like The Most Dangerous Superstition, songs by Jordan Page, books by Larkin Rose, projects by Davi Barker, Authoritarian Sociopathy, books by Adam Kokesh, Marine, anti-war, done his part. So this is why I see as a tapestry, as a part of this awakening, your book can have this kind of impact. How do you think it's going to be changing to an individual that can you be objective and look at it and go, yeah, when my, you know, distant cousin of whatever reads this, or the status friend down the, or the, you know, incarcerated guy in the cell next or whatever, they read your book, what happens to them and why?
Yeah, it's a personal revolution, Ernie, and this is actually in the book in terms of what it means. Is this a revolution? Because in the bigger picture, it's not. It's an evolution. It's the evolution of humanity inevitably towards a voluntary society. And, you know, I'm very confident in that, and the book lays out that case for all of the trends that make me believe that this is inevitable, and at least it's achieving a voluntary society is our destiny as a species, and I'm extremely confident in that. Yes, there's a chance that we could kill each other with nukes or some other crazy, you know, apocalyptic phenomenon could happen. But the natural course of human development and the forces of nature that are being brought to bear on the human experience in terms of technology, life expectancy, productivity, all of the dynamics of the paradigm changing and the way people are waking up and being empowered by technology leads me to the conclusion that the achievement of a voluntary society is inevitable, is our destiny. But I got to tell you, Ernie, it's not for me. It's not just about leave me alone. And I know for you, it's about something more than that too, because you're so motivated to share this message because you're providing value to other people. And, you know, we have a design that we're working on for a t-shirt now that's got the V of voluntarism and the snake from the Gadsden flag, the coiled rattlesnake, where it says, don't tread on me. But instead it says voluntarism, don't tread on anyone. And I think that's the important difference between conservatives' view of what freedom is and a libertarian's view of what freedom is. Because for a conservative, it is really just leave me alone. And I don't mean to peg you as a conservative, Ernie. Don't get me wrong here. But that, you know, a conservative will say, well, yeah, I want freedom. I want to do what I want. And I want my land and I want my space and leave me alone. And that's cool. And screw everybody else. In fact, bomb them so that I can be left alone. And the libertarian message is certainly a lot more moral and universal than that, but I would hope that libertarians also, and this is certainly captured in the book, are smart enough to realize that we are all living in a less vibrant world, even if our rights are being respected, because humanity is not achieving its potential because it is being held back by violence. It is being held back by the coercion of the state. And while you might be doing reasonably well, you might be wealthy, you might be taken care of, you might be left alone in your little corner of the world, you are living in a less vibrant world because of statism, because there are other people being affected by this. And for me, I could go be left alone. You know, I've got my disability from the Marine Corps. I've got my residual income from my YouTube channel. I don't have to work another day in my life if I don't want to. You know, I've earned that. And I'm motivated because I don't want to bring kids into the world until we've abolished statism. I don't want to see a world where other people are suffering. If I'm comfortable and I see other people suffering, I'd rather see them flourishing and my world be that much better as a result. And I know that you get the same thing too, Ernie. I don't mean to say that this is somehow some new idea to you, but I think you sell yourself short when you say it's just about leaving me alone.
You know, I understand what you're saying, but I want to be left alone to do what I want. And I tell you what I want. And this is, you know, a grandfather with a sixth kid on the way. Sierra's about ready to have her child. Rhea just had her son. So we got six grandchildren, you know, either here or in the pipeline. And I'll tell you, That is what I want to spend my time. Those are the people that I want to raise and free. Those are the ones that I want to be left alone to spend my time on. That is my focus. And the thing is, when I say leave me alone, I want, like you say, don't tread on anyone. I love that. That's awesome. You know, we got it scrolling up here, you know, on the screen. And it may be hard for them to see, you know, the image here. Right in the bottom there, it says, don't tread on anyone, and the voluntarist V with the snake. That's awesome. You know, I really want to emphasize that. I understand what you're saying, but my focus and my effort and my influence has been on my children and my grandchildren. And any interference to that, I think, is a detriment to everything. That has been my concern, is I want to take my resources and divert it where I, well, we need your money to help the downtrodden of the somebody else's kids or the whatever. I'm going, no. You leave me, how about I take care of my family? And then I have my family, they do their own philanthropic helping, kind of they're encouraged throughout their life to do, and got their pen pal and kid they, you know, send money to in Africa, doing whatever. They still have some of that kind of stuff going on. But my point is that we need to be free and left alone to have community, because the community is where they're going after. And in fact, why we're doing the newspaper is to penetrate in printed form to small communities, because we thought that was a safe haven, and it's not. They're going at, man, that's where they're targeting. They said where they saw their weakness, and that's where they're going after you. So and one thing I do, while we're scrolling the pictures up here we had for you, there's one that has you laying with Baloo, and it looks like your hand's injured, and he's got, you know, a cut too. What's that about?
Oh, we had a little dogfight adventure, and I got my hand chewed up by a pit bull. It happens.
Oh, okay. Well, at least everybody's okay. Baloo okay?
Yeah, he's way tougher than me.
Well, he's a freaking Great Dane. A guy stands, like, you know, to my chest, you know, when he's on all fours. Yeah, you know, well, more with Adam Kokesh when we
same
come
pit
back.
When it comes to investing in precious metals, you need a source you can trust who offers you choices and empowers you to maximize your wealth. That's where Roberts & Roberts Brokerage can help. Roberts & Roberts is a trusted name in precious metals. Since 1977, Roberts & Roberts has been providing you with the finest gold and silver bullion, coins, rounds, and bars at genuine and honest prices. They make it easy to invest in precious metals and work with you to suit your investment needs. In addition to offering gold and silver for sale for U.S. dollars, Roberts & Roberts Brokerage is now accepting Bitcoin in exchange for their quality precious metals products. To speak with a professional from Roberts & Roberts about investing in precious metals, call toll-free 800-874-9760. Write this number down, 800-874-9760. Visit Roberts & Roberts online at rrbi.co. That's rrbi.co. On behalf of Roberts & Roberts, here's hoping your day is as good as gold.
I'm hoping that we get to talk, you know, before you have to go back to Washington, right?
Virginia, but yeah, on September 5th.
Man. You know, it's so you in a relationship now, or relationships, or?
Nope. Carrie dumped me 2 weeks ago, and I'm really glad she did.
So now you're just kind of, you know, you're not looking to start up another relationship as you're facing this, I would imagine.
Not really, but I'm open to it. I'm not, yeah.
Well, how do you like in California? I mean, you know, that's a difference.
I love it. It's amazing.
Taxes. You know, Southern California.
I don't pay taxes. What are you talking about?
Southern California is awesome. I mean, the weather is just—it's just awesome.
Yeah.
And it's and if I had if it was a freer environment, you know, that would give me a lot of draw, you know, from Phoenix. But Phoenix is pretty freaking cool too. But I tell you, it's the atmosphere and the culture of the people here, and we really focused on that a lot over the last 20 years to try and keep it that way. But it also makes it to where you're the target. That's why we get, mm-hmm. you know, Arpaio mm-hmm. and Napolitano and.
Yeah.
You know, they come in. I mean, you know, the head of Gestapo comes out of governor of Arizona. I mean, what does that tell you? You know, so it's, there's a lot of focus here, but the people are resisting, And I'm just, it's going to be, Arizona's going to be one of the places that just, it's not by an open rebellion as much as it just, you know, we don't care. You know, we're over here. We're going to wait it out. Because I think as the end comes, you know, the end game, it's going to be financial, and it's going to be who can survive it. And here in Arizona, it gets hot in the summer, but the rest of the time, freaking growing stuff. And there's a lot of water here. So, you know, it's, I think we have a good chance, and we're going to be focused on that. All right, here we go.
You can put the Liberty Radio Network on the air in your area. Visit broadcast.lrn.fm to learn how. Broadcast.lrn.fm.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Love is but a song we sing, fears that we will die. You can make the mountains ring, or make the angels cry. Though the bird is on the wing, and you may
right, not later. You know, this is kind of the, I think Adam was talking about is like, man, you can't just go and just be left alone. Well, I want to be left alone to not be alone with the people that I want. I don't want to be socially and economically engineered as to who I have to associate with, not associate with, not allowed to associate with, who I want to associate with is incarcerated. I mean, you know, it's just, I want to be able to flourish as a human being. And that was the one thing that really, in the, you know, revolution speech, revolution march we had in July of 08 when I first met Adam, is, you know, humanity marches on. That line right there, I mean, of all the lines, are the hey, in the end, you know what, humanity marches on. Where are we marching to, Adam? What do you think is going to happen?
Well, in my book, I talk about localization as the solution, and a lot of libertarians kind of miss the how of how we get from point A to point B, you know, that we have a statist society now, and somehow we're going to have a voluntary society, and here's what it looks like. And I think localization is not just how we should try to make it happen. It's how it's going to happen, whether we want it to or not. It's simply a matter of how smooth and how peaceful it's going to be. And if humanity, society ignores the problems of government, the unsustainability of modern bureaucratic governments, especially in the United States, these systems are not sustainable. They're going to come to a point of collapse, and it might fall away in chunks. There might be some serious upheaval, but if we bury our heads in the sand, then what do? We sit back and hope that the government spares us in its violent death throes as it desperately clings to power. I'm not okay with that, and I don't think that's something that we should be pushing on people, saying like, yep, dangerous, violent collapse, come and get your guns and your gold and your ammo and head for the hills and, you know, screw everybody else. We're all just going to take a step back, and then maybe we'll come back and pick up the pieces later. No, I don't think that's an acceptable proposal. And I certainly understand all the reasons to protect yourself. And, you know, I wish I had my bunker. I have my escape pod, and, I have what I'm allowed to have, and so on. But really, we need to be looking at this from a perspective of how do we make this transition as smooth and as peaceful as possible. And that's why I think that orderly dissolution is the way. But it's really just a matter of how much attention can we pay to these issues as as society becomes ungovernable, that is, intolerant of violence, intolerant of centralized control.
Well, what are you looking for? Somebody, the good guy, to wear the ring? You know, through me would wield such evil. I mean, you know, I'm like, I'm not understanding what you're advocating. I mean,
we dissolve the government. I say you take it apart from the top down. And if you want to use that analogy, in terms of my own presidential platform, I'm volunteering to go throw the ring in the fire. You know, 4 years after me as president, there won't be a federal government. But it's not about, again, it's not about me. I hope that I run in 2020 and get, you know, 1-2% of the vote, and that in 2024 or 2028, everybody's running on this platform, because it's obvious and this is what the people are demanding.
Okay, I give you a perfect example. This is happening today. Okay, this is a good time to talk about this. Barry Hess, the Libertarian candidate for governor, I think you probably met, you know, here at some of the parties and so on. He got, you know, the signatures to get on the ballot. Even the Democrats wanted them up there. They're out collecting signatures and doing signatures and whatever, and the Republicans challenged the signatures today. It goes to court on whether he's going to be on the ballot or not. So if there's an opportunity for the man, they go, nope, and it's over arguing over, like, you know, the last, you know, couple of signatures on petitions. I mean, they really got it down to these five, you know, and kind of,
yeah,
right, you know, that kind of thing. Well, what happens?
I've been through this myself, running for Congress in Mexico. We had to play signature games.
Yeah, no. So you know what I'm talking about. So they're, they're challenging. Well, they're in court today. Now, if Barry is challenged off the ballot, he can't go back on, you know, in any other form, you know, whatever. So do I, you know, as one of the prominent libertarian known, run for Secretary of State a couple of times with Barry. You know, in 06, we were together up there and going to be in butt heads and so on. You know, do I run down? I go, okay, you guys want to play? You want to play? This is how we're going to play. I go down, file as a write-in for the primary, you know, win the nomination for the state as the libertarian in the primary as a write-in, boom, I'm on the general election ballot, you know, come September, after August. So I'm going, you guys want to play this game? All right, fine. I get to go up and say and do the Adam Kokesh thing and versus the kind of Nunya and kind of Nover. So I understand the concept, because I may be faced with that very issue today. Because if I don't, we lose that opportunity to have a good, clean, libertarian freedom, leave-me-aloneism, leave-you-alone-zone, kind of whatever voice in this entire thing. So the disillusionment of government starts with the disillusionment people have in government. You know, so I'm
absolutely.
So this is I understand this role. I've been running for office and not voting for. I've run for Congress three times, U.S. Senate against McCain. I've run for Secretary of State twice. I run for the state legislature. I run. I get it. But the point is that get what, you know? It's, you know, you read your book and zero to I get it. Well, I'm going to try and, you know, provide the I get it too. But get what? I mean, when you say they get it, what is it?
Freedom
is the answer. What's the question?
Exactly.
So this is I'm looking for. Let's say you do some hard time. I mean, you know, I would be shocked. I mean, before you even did the thing in July, we talked. I'm going, well, I hope you got 5 years to, you know, that you got a plan of keep yourself busy with a bunch of books and whatever, because you're going to have, you know, 5 years is usually kind of how they handle this stuff. If you do anything less than that, I say you win. So the thing is that, and they may just, you know, probation and strict this and that and kind of, and we don't know, but I'm hoping that would be, let's say, the max that I think it might be, 5 years. That puts you right around your 2020 campaign race run for You Leave Me Aloneism. Are you going to be able to do that as a felon?
Yep, because it's a constitutional office.
Oh.
But, okay. You know, you're talking about signatures and things like that and write-in status, and I'm all, you know, for it when the time comes, but I'm really not concerned about the how electorally and the mechanics of that. I think we can figure that out when we come to it. What I'm more concerned with is the fact that in order for this to work, you have to have a certain overwhelming critical mass of support. And as you know, Ernie, we're a long way from that, but the book gets us a big step closer. And if I may, it's adamversustheman.com/freedom. Or if you just go to adamversustheman.com, you can't miss it. It's available as an audiobook. You can get it as a YouTube video with just the audio right now. We're going to have an illustrated video coming. We've got translations in a few dozen languages in the works right now. We've got the plain text. We've got the RTF, the PDF, the print your own, every single format available. You can get the logos. This is a truly open source distribution plan. And for people that understand this and go, you know what, I want to help people get the red pill. I want to help wake people up. I want people to get this message. There's a conversation at forums.adamversustheman.com. People are already jumping in with guerrilla marketing ideas.
And, you know, Ernie, we've got some opportunities for you as well. I think we're going to have to talk offline about that. But it's just, it's exciting to see that the people who I was hoping would get the book for what it is are getting it. And, you know, it's just been an incredible relief over the last 2 weeks. You know, it's only been out for, these last 2 weeks in this pre-release version. The main official release is coming Independence Day. We're doing a 24-hour marathon July 3rd.
Okay, I'm looking at the site. We got it up, you know, for everybody to see, you know, and I can see the links here. Ebook PDF, audio book, a single MP3, audio book as chapters, you know, 8.5 by 11, easy print PDF, plain text, art, blah, 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 blah. This is an awesome way. You went open, kind of, here you go. You know, I'm very interested in how this works out. How's the release going so far?
So far, it's been great. It's been amazing. People are getting it. It's getting out. We're getting amazing feedback.
Awesome, awesome, awesome. Hey, hold on a second. I want to talk to you. But I tell you, you know, Adam Kokesh, the story, heck, the Oliver Stone movie. Yeah, don't think it's not done. Oh. Maybe that's why he went to California. The movie, Adam versus the Man. What a title.
Is not.
Yeah, don't laugh, man. That's, you know, it's going to be a happy ending. You know, I'm interested. We're still recording, but, you know, kind of, you know, can you give me kind of an idea? I mean, is it thousands? You know, it's getting it?
It's hard to say. I mean, I posted the entire audio as a YouTube video late, like I just did it a couple days ago, and that's got almost 3,000 views right now. And, you know, YouTube only counts if you go most of the way through a video. There have been somewhere around 10,000 downloads of the audio book through my podcast website.
No, I see this YouTube. It's 3 hours. Oh my God, you did read the whole thing and put it up on you. Man, okay, you put some effort into this, Holmes. Okay, okay. I get it.
Yeah, and that's just the audiobook. The PDF, I haven't even looked at the downloads, but on Amazon we have 35 reviews already, and there's a pretty vibrant conversation going on in the forums. So it's like I'm really not even trying. You know, at some point I'll go back and look at the numbers and
yeah, I understand. You built it and kind of didn't deal. Yeah.
Well, no, it's really weird for me. Because this is like the first book I've released. It's not the first book I've written. I have another one that I'm sitting on right now, my war memoir. But, you know, you put out a meme and the response is instantaneous. You put out a YouTube video and you kind of know within 24 hours. And, you know, it's status update, instantaneous feedback. And even though this is a really short book and I wrote it to be as short as possible, fuck, man, you gotta like twist people's arms to get them to read a book. Even to listen to a 3-hour audio file, you gotta like twist people's arms to say, hey, just.
Our time is consumed. It is, I mean, I'm just telling, that's one thing that, you know, I think sparked Donna's conversation about going living in a hole in the ground, is that I'm going, look, you know, all of the increase in productivity to communicate and to work and everything with cell phones and computers and everything, because, you know, God forbid you had to, you know, we got to go down to Kinko's to be able to fax something to somebody. I mean, you know, so this was, you know, I know somebody with a fax. This guy's got a fax. Can I borrow the fax? Ooh, did you learn on a 3,500 baud modem computer that you can create a PDF thing in your computer and then fax it? Oh, we can do fax trees that we send it to all these 3 or 4 guys that have like 100 each in there, and overnight we could fax it out to people. Woo-hoo-hoo! And then we had all this additional technology, and what happened? It just filled up our time. You know, it just, we have more productivity to pay taxes to the man. We have more ability to, you know, be marketed to with the what. You know,
Ernie, you got to read the book. Let me tell you this. If you want to skim the book, look, you could do this in 20 minutes. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
You could read.
I'm going to do the whole thing. I'm going to get it on my way out Saturday. I'm going to listen to it on the plane.
Yeah, okay, cool. Well, and I assume you'll get it eventually, but there are people who are going to listen to it and go like, and people have said this already, I listened to it and I wanted to read it. Because, like, I listened to it and it was so much material, I wanted to stop and read every sentence and consider it slowly. But chapters 1 through 8 you can look at the table of contents and you pretty much know what I'm going to say. And it's cool for you to hear it, to see how I did it, and to see why this is the, and it's global. This is not like a lot of the other libertarian manifestos are Amero-centric, or they're too philosophical, or they don't cover enough. They don't answer the, but what about this, but what about that questions. This book answers all the, but what about questions, and it does it from a global perspective. And the backdrop is not the American government or the American experience. It's the it's the global phenomenon, the modern phenomenon of statism and modern bureaucratic governments. And it's chapters 9 and 10. You can just skip ahead to those and read those two, and you'll kind of know where I'm going with this. But I think you're going to agree that it's the ultimate red pill. And anyway, so check this out. Here's what I want to talk to you about business-wise. I'm trying to raise right now $11,000 to do the first print run of 10,000 copies. We have a guy that's set up to do them for $1.10 each. And because the book is totally open source, you could do this anyway. You could take it. You could print your own. You could put Freedom's Phoenix on the cover if you wanted to. But what I want to encourage is for people to sponsor print runs. And what we could do is take your logo, freedomsphoenix.com, or whatever else you want to promote, or anybody else's stuff, and actually print it on the inside cover and say, this copy of Freedom was brought to you in part by Freedom's Phoenix or anybody else. And we will, if people want to sponsor a print run that way, we have people lining up to give these away.
Okay, this is what we can, I can already see how we can do it. One.
Good.
I need to read it. I mean, do that before I go, you know, whatever.
Yeah, of course.
So we do that over this vacation. We got till September, so hopefully by end of July. This is two things that are happening. One, when I go to Pork Fest and we're meeting with, you know, all the boys, you know, and girls, and we're going to, you know, lay out the newspaper and what's going to be emphasized. And so we already got templates and so on. And it's going to be done in such a way that you have an editable PDF and or a InDesign file that people can just take it, you know, add their display ads, local articles, whatever, and just take it to a printer and print. And there you go. Now, in there, and we do this nationally, we're going to do actual printed copies that are going to be in Phoenix and Pensacola. Tim Fry wants to, you know, help with their local, what they're going to be doing. So we're going to do that first as a demonstration of it. We have some people in Manhattan, Chicago, and L.A. that want to have their own little thing, but, you know, I'm not going to wait on them. They have the opportunity, and we'll see what happens. But we're at least going to do Arizona and Florida. So when we do that, we need to, you know, of course, include, you know, the marketing of what you got, display ads for that, and different things that we can do, and talk about this opportunity, which I can think of right off the bat, is Donna, get work with you today, call you and get it up in the funding center on Freedom's Phoenix so that we can announce and make and get it. We'll get it ready and we'll launch it when we get back. So when we get back, you know, because we're getting back July 5th. So maybe before the 4th of July or on the 4th of July, we'll launch that funding center project. And I'm good for, you know, if I like it, and I'm at least $1,000, 1,000, you know, copies, and I'll use it and however I want to do it and kind of whatever, assuming I like it.
Well, you get the idea. It's, you can do whatever the hell you want with it. You can print it. You could put your name on it. You could say Freedom by Ernie Hancock, because I printed it, and take my name off it. And, you know, I wouldn't try to stop you. So if I can help facilitate that in any way with the print setup that I've got, you know, and the print files that I've already got for it, then I can help you out, and I can just deliver these, or I can distribute them
for
you.
No, I see
you.
All that. I see the work done. I get it. You know, you had me a hello, man. You know,
Read it, and then we'll talk.
Yeah, the only thing is, let me read it. I have that's why I created this infrastructure, was just for that reason. And we can put it in the marketplace now. Now, the printing of the funding center for putting Freedom's Phoenix on it, that would be to our people, hey, help us, and we're going to pass this out, and you'll get a copy of and something, you know?
Yep.
So we'll work it out, the help of the distribution of this, right after I read it.
Well, we've also got some guys that are taking on my entire merch operation, which is really cool. Just as an aside, so that you know how we're doing this, I have these guys that have stepped up, and basically they run everything from my merchandise operation top to bottom. It's a separate website. So if you go to Adam vs. the Man and click store, it takes you to their website. And we give them designs and we promote it. And they just cut me a check at the end of the month, every month. But if you want to get in on that and you want to work with them, they're the ones that have this the hookups for the print setup. And they're
okay. I'm looking for the store on your page. Where's the store?
No, it's not up yet. It'll be like a week or two.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I'll let you know.
Well, these guys, there's been people that contact. They wanted to take on a bunch of Freedom's Phoenix stuff too. And if these guys are capable and they're doing a good job and they got the I got a bunch of stuff for them. They can slash. Our crap too. I'm looking to do that. So we can see if we can work these guys in, because that's what the marketplace. I got to make my own t-shirts. I'd rather not,
We're definitely working with them for this book, because they have that. We came up with a format that's like half magazine style for the book. That's how we were able to print it for $1.10 each, which is like insane cheap. So anyway, be in touch. But when you're done with the book, you got to let me know what you think.
Maybe we'll phone you in into the show when we're at Porkfest or something. Are you going?
No, but hey, with the book, when you get to the end, you're really gonna like the part with the aliens and the lizard people.
All right, cool, whatever.
I'm just kidding.
At the very end. Hey, Jordan Page, man, he's going off on aliens are involved, kind of something, man. He's really, he does not believe that this is just like accident. There's big bad things afoot, and nothing surprises me anymore. So I'm looking forward to helping you, and because I do it because I know it's going to make me look good and help me and us doing whatever. So I don't care. But the thing is let me read it first, or at least do the audio, and then I'll go ahead and we are ready to pull the trigger. I got everything set, but first have Donna take Donna's call. And do you got time now? Donna can do it right now.
Sure.
Okay, hold on, Donna. Go ahead and pull up into the system what she can do, and she can set up the store and the funding to get everything ready right now, so that when we just push the button, because it's gonna be more difficult when we're gone, and when we push the button like 4th of July, then we can get right into it. I get back and we can campaign in the newspaper. So okay. I'm really would hope that you would, maybe I'll want to, after I do the book, I'll select what part I want to put in the newspaper.
Why don't you read it first and then get in touch with me? Because I think you're gonna you have a good sense of the book just from talking to me about it. But when you read it and you read the afterword, I think you'll have a different idea. I think you'll want to just until you've actually read it and get what it is. It's impossible for you to say what you want to do.
I understand. I suspect that there's a call to action. I suspect it's a Boston Tea Party, Moulin LeBay thing, which, by the way, I'm going to be seeing in a couple of weeks. We're going to spend a week with him. He's doing a AR-15 class kind of stuff. And so up in Washington State, so I'm like, all right, cool, so we'll have fun with that. But the it's a lot of these books.
It's not that specific, and I was very careful about that, Ernie. The only real call to action is to live free and promote the message.
All right, cool. I'm for that, because everybody's got a call to action. Even Michael Badnarik's books, Boston's books, you got all these other different organizations' books, and I get all kinds of stuff in the mail and books and promoting and have me on to tell you how we're going to rule you better. And I'm just like, I want to be able to have my own pursuit of happiness. That's all I want,
Well, that's what this book is about.
All right, cool. I'm all over it. All right, thanks for spending time with me. Hold on a second. Donna's going to get to you here, and we'll get you set up so we can just pull the trigger later.
Thank you, Ernie.
All right, man. All right. Peace, brother.
Cool.